you thought it was safe to turn on your radio.
Something fresh and exciting. Somebody with a sock personality that will sweep people right off their feet.
Where is he? What is he up to? What other terrors can he unleash at will?
Starring your genial host, renowned writer, art collector, and teller of strange tales.
What fiendish power did he possess? Where did he come from? Who is this man?
It's the Shannon Burke Show on the Florida Man Radio Network.
Believe me.
For a Monday. Talk radio the way our founders intended.
Believe me.
America, if a white guy refuses to partake in other culture, he's not inclusive. But if he does engage in other cultures, he's guilty of cultural appropriation. Day 1200. Keep it the Eric in America. Say hello to EZ.
What's up?
Good afternoon to you, putting the heat in Heather.
Hello.
Double H is here. We'll hear from her, and Heather has answers. In the next hour, Dark History, the top of the third hour, our buddy Eric Matheny from the Bob and Eric Save America podcast. In the final hour, your remarks in between. Columbia University's negotiation is over. The negotiating with these protesters was ridiculous to start with. It was a bad idea. Their deadline was 7 minutes ago. I'm sorry, 2 minutes ago. And they must leave campus this afternoon or be suspended and disciplined up to expulsion. All because they and the universities told them, look, we're not going to divest. This whole divest. You know, the fact that, and by the way, if you want to divest from Israel, there are a lot of companies you got to pay attention to. For example, here's just a list of a few companies that are. That are doing business in and with Israel, the country, the government, 3M, Amazon, Vimeo, AOL, Mercedes-Benz, Apple, Bosch, AT&T, Toshiba, BlackBerry, Barclays, the financial company. Don't ever book any travel on booking.com or buy anything from Unilever. That includes Ben & Jerry's ice cream. Broadcom, the list goes on and on. Citigroup, Cisco, Dell, Dropbox. If you got a Dropbox, get rid of it. eBay, Meta, anything on Meta, GE, GM, Google. Don't ever Google anything. Every time you Google, you're supporting Israel.
So pretty much everything.
IBM, HP. Every time I print something out at home, boom, Israel.
$1 straight to Israel.
John Deere, don't cut your grass anymore. If you have a John Deere product, get rid of it. They're heavily invested in agricultural technology with Israel. Lenovo, LG, Microsoft, Motorola, Oracle, Nestle, Nokia, PayPal. Don't drink Pepsi ever again or any of their products. Any Philips products. Samsung, Sears, Siemens, Sony, the people that make your beloved vaccine, the people at Pfizer, TI, Xerox, Yahoo, Mitsubishi, the whole company. the list is, I mean, everyone practically globally is invested in Israel. This country. I mean, our trade, our free trade was established with Israel in 1985. The first one entered into in the United States by the United States. They entered into with the United States. And we do about $50 billion a year in trade. United States beef is the primary supplier to Israel. If you know of somebody in the farming or the meat industry. And they invest about $25 billion into the United States a year. Our FAA works with their FAA. Our Health and Homeland Security Department works with they have a counterpart in Israel. We have a renewable energy agreement with them signed by our energy secretary. Everybody from mayors to agricultural secretaries to city officials visit Israel every year. I think, doesn't Orlando have a sister city in Israel?
Most major cities do.
It's home to 2,500 United States firms in Israel that employ 72,000 Israelis. The New England-Israel Business Council released a study last year that showed that Israel-founded businesses have generated 9,000 jobs in Massachusetts alone and indirectly support another 18,000. They represent 4% of that state's GDP. And when they say invested in Israel, what exactly do they mean?
More than likely, it's companies that have base in Israel, which a lot of places invest in. There's a lot of banking that goes on there. There's a lot of transfer money there. The people don't understand that companies invest all over the world.
Right. Columbia wants their school to divest $13.6 billion endowment from any company linked to Israel. Well, you just heard several of them.
That's all of them, yes. Pretty much every company that's not like a mom-and-pop company has some investments in Israel.
And businesses that are profiting from the Israel-Hamas war. Well, that would mainly be American companies. Right? Raytheon, the missile contractors, defense contractors. A lot want them to just close their investments and sever academic ties with Israeli universities. I don't think anybody, the last time a university I can recall divesting in a situation where it was of global concern had something to do with I think it was Columbia. They divested from apartheid South Africa. I mean.
But to also go out there and say, oh, we don't even want you academically talking to that Israel as well. That's just dumb. You do know that we academically talk with North Korea, China, the academics
all over the world. Russia.
Yeah, their academics are worldwide. They're not politically shut down.
Colombia has divested from fossil fuels, believe it or not, which is pretty stupid. At the request of their students. Proponents of divestment say that the value lies in raising awareness and stigmatizing partnerships with targeted regimes or industries. Well, many endowments are, by the way, managed by asset managers, and are invested in fairly opaque private equity funds. Even if they decided they were going to instruct their dominant management groups to divest from Israel, it would be almost impossible to disentangle themselves from anything Israeli. So it really is a fruitless, there's no value in even requesting it. I see. That was a different. I'm trying to see the updates. The cops are lined up at Columbia. I don't know if they're pushing them out now or not. One group at UCLA, as you can imagine, is pretty hardcore at UCLA. They have bought an anonymous group so far. I bought a giant television screen or a movie screen and are showing, there's a 45-minute tape filmed by Hamas as they killed and beheaded people and did horrible things. It's all 45. I think it's an hour, 45 or 45 minutes. They're running this on a loop with the audio blaring facing their encampment. And I don't know. I haven't seen any. Are they watching it with happiness and glee?
Oh, I'm sure there's a little cheering going on from some of them.
You think?
Because they're monsters. A lot of them.
Oh, my God.
There's a lot of people that have taken protesting past where it can be and gone into the actual, you know, they're taking glee out of some of this stuff.
This is the audio. They're showing you. The guy called his dad. I killed her. I killed him. I killed the husband. I killed her. They're just showing it over and over and over. I think it's a wonderful idea. Arizona State. I guess when their time was up to dismantle their encampment, the cops started, and every frat guy from frat row, from fraternity row, showed up in pink shorts and started. And they helped. They were ripping down tents and throwing them in dumpsters. I thought that was a.
Yeah, because there's a lot of these college students that just want to go back to class again. They
right.
like to do that. That's like, I don't know, the video that was going around all weekend from a Georgia campus. Georgia State Trooper, he's carrying this girl away, and she tries to do the body
slap
thing.
Yeah.
And he picks her up, and he just carries away. And then you see like two people are just normally walking by with their coffee. They look by like, huh, okay, continue on.
Really. I think most of these colleges have had it. Well, how long do these things normally go? You know, you're.
How many? The Chaz went on for.
Went for longer than that. It was like a summer.
Yeah.
Well. Good luck with that divestment thing, people. And they just said we will not divest. Look, if it bothers you that much, just to quit, or go to a different school. Then only to find out that they're.
Yes.
You would imagine if you had billions of dollars, it's not like the chancellor's up there going, hey, this looks like a good stock, Phil. What do you think? There's there's a giant hedge fund, a manager or managers that make up a ubiquitous group of, whatever the investments are. You know, it's not.
And these are a bunch of supposedly smart college kids that like don't understand that if you were to, I don't know, divest billions of dollars from different companies and move them around, that it may have a problem with the stock market?
You got giant asset managers that are just investing in various private equity firms. They don't even know the details. They just know the performance and the history of the performance and maybe the people involved and what the projections are, and that's it. Yeah, you think a bunch of smart college students would realize that. I guess not.
Well, these are probably also the liberal arts and.
Oh, that's true. Well, listen, at least they know, at least they've come that far. It's a lot further for those two idiots we played last week. They were like, "Why? What are we here? What do we want them to do?" Well, I don't know. I wish I was more educated on that.
Well, I bet you go to a lot of them and go, okay, what do you want? Oh, well, we would like them to divest from Israel. Okay. Can you start naming some companies that they are currently investing in with Israel that you'd like them to divest from?
Not a chance.
You just you want them to remove their name from everything that is slightly from Israel, and you don't know anything what they are.
Mm. Look, is that Columbia there on the TV? That doesn't look like anyone. It looks like more people. Oh my God, that's a mess. Are they leaving? Are they marching? What's going on?
It looks like they're leaving because nobody's in their tents anymore. So,
those are a lot of really nice tents. The House Democrats demanded that the Columbia University trustees get involved and disband the tent camp or resign on behalf of. Jewish students in New York, Josh Gostomer from New Jersey and Dan Goldman from New York. Well, yeah. What about the kids that are paying for an education that simply cannot get one because they can't get to class? 200 anti-Israel protesters that are arrested at college campuses across the United States. That's a rough estimate. This went on all weekend long while the rest of you were just enjoying your family and hanging out and, White House correspondents' dinner was, Saturday or Sunday, one or the other. Who knows? I never understood the real reason for a correspondents' dinner.
It's like all the Hollywood. It's a time for the news reporters all to get together and, you know, fellatio each other and
yeah.
tell each other how great of a job they're doing.
I don't remember it being. I guess it is. Are you roasting the president or
I think historically it's usually been roasting the president.
And the president gets up there and he may do some roasting or poke fun at other people in the crowd, right? Yeah. This one apparently was really Colin Jost. Am I saying it right? Jost. Colin Jost from Saturday Night Live. Started with a bit of a hand job.
But before I begin tonight, can we just acknowledge how refreshing it is to see a president of the United States at an event that doesn't begin with a bailiff saying, "All rise."
That was probably the funniest joke all day.
And I would like to point out, it's after 10 p.m. Sleepy Joe is still awake. While Donald Trump has spent the past week falling asleep in court every morning.
He did take a stab at our Congressman Matt Gaetz. Tasteless.
We are all here tonight at Nerd Prom. Well, Matt Gaetz is at regular prom, but...
Man. That's a little... That's a bit of a stretch. You're insinuating that Matt Gaetz is, hunting down high school girls?
Yeah.
10 p.m., Sleepy Joe is...
I've always heard that one. Hold on.
Trump himself is young and sharp.
Wait, let me turn the first of this. There we go.
Also, it's not like Trump himself is young and sharp. I'm not saying both candidates are old, but you know Jimmy Carter is out there thinking, I could maybe win this thing.
Joe thought it was really, really funny.
He's only 99.
One of the jokes he told... I mean, they're supposed to be a bit of a dig at the president, right? But at the same time, I mean, he joked about him falling up the stairs of Air Force One.
Yeah.
Where is that? Oh, I know I have that one here somewhere. This has got to be out here.
Many of you here tonight, I pretend to do news on TV.
Oh, this is different. He's poking fun at President Biden's falling black votes.
Weekend update co-anchor Michael Che was going to join me here tonight, but in solidarity with President Biden, I decided to lose all my black support.
That was funny in the wrong direction, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, like I said, I think they normally try to roast him.
Where's the one where he jokes about the... Oh, I got my eyes. It's the first one, I believe. No, that's not it.
We are all here tonight at Nerd Prom. We are all here tonight. Still at Nerd Prom.
What the hell?
And I would like to point out.
All right, forget it.
It's after.
It was a funny joke. I got to go back to. Let me just search him. He said, the economy's great. The numbers are great, but it's a bad image. It's a bad visual because, while it appears that he's stumbling up, he's definitely going in the right direction. More or less.
Yeah. Looks like it's stumbling up the stairs.
Right.
Was it just the joke?
Trump said the White House Correspondents' Dinner was really bad.
It was really bad. Colin Jost bombed, and Crooked Joe was an absolute disaster. It doesn't get much worse than this.
Why would he pay attention to the White House Correspondents' Dinner?
To see what they were going to say about him.
He did say something about him being good and decent, and his grandfather voted for him.
And with my family in mind, I wanted to share one last thing with you before I go, and I wanted to share one thing with you, Mr. President, before I go. I lost my grandfather this year, as you alluded to, a firefighter
William Kelly. He's the reason that our son's middle name is William. He helped raise me growing up, and I would not be here today without him. My grandpa was a firefighter on Staten Island for 40 years. To make extra money for his family, he was a substitute teacher, and he painted houses. And since it's Staten Island, I should point out it's not like the Scorsese Irishman painting houses. He was not a mafia hitman. He actually painted houses. The FBI is here. I don't want to start a whole thing. My grandfather was another rare Irishman who didn't drink because he lost his father and his brother to alcoholism.
Okay, blah, blah, blah. At the end, he voted for him. He's only because he's a decent man. Here's the...
I mean, I'm sure someone else will vote twice in this election using his name, but that's just how the Democratic machine works. He voted for you, and the reason that he voted for you is because you're a decent man.
Why do people keep saying that?
Because that's the marching orders that everybody was sent out.
He's a decent man.
Yeah, because they use the same phrasing every time. It's he's a decent man. He's a
visually though we don't see. I mean, yeah. Look at his. The family stuff. The diary. Hunter is now. We'll get to this when we get back. Hunter is suing Fox News because they put some intimate photos of him from his laptop on TV in an attempt to hurt him. We'll do it next. Hang on. It's a Shannon Burke Show.
Are you doing time? Lonely, or is your cellmate stealing from your commissary? Go ahead and vent your inmate issues to Heather at escapewithheather@gmail.com.
We've been getting so much email from incarcerated gentlemen. So we set up a special correspondence, escapewithheather@gmail.com. Don't send me, if you're not in locked up somewhere, we don't want to hear from you on that email.
Oh, we can tell, too.
We know. Well, he comes from the...
Yeah, it has to come from the system, so we'll be able to tell. System, yeah.
escapewithheather@gmail.com. Like, if you want us to promote your lion fight when you get out or something like that, let us know.
I think we need, in jailhouse cooking recipes.
Yes. Yes, jailhouse birthday cake.
Whatever's going on in the jail system right now.
Here's another call of Jost.
It's also wonderful to be back in Washington. I love being in Washington. The last time I was in D.C., I left my cocaine at the White House. Luckily, the president was able to put it to good use for his State of the Union. I'm kidding, of course. The president doesn't call it cocaine. He calls it high-speed rail. Ooh,
that's a good one.
Yeah.
By the way, can you blame the guy for turning to cocaine? He must be exhausted, orchestrating 4 separate trials against his rival, rigging the Super Bowl, and gearing up to steal a second election. Wow.
Somehow when they say the real stuff out loud is really not funny.
Also, the crowd got really quiet on it, too. You're like, oh, yeah. Oh,
man. Let's see. Now I'm going to hear his grandfather crap again. There was a good... Yeah. Some of the protesters at UCLA had an issue. Even though they posted several no banana signs around because somebody there has a, what do they call it? There was a protester in the liberated zone at UCLA with potentially fatal banana allergy. Counter protesters invaded the encampment and saw all the no banana signs. The next day, they came back waving bananas like settlers waving machine guns. And smeared bananas everywhere.
Do you go by, once you're in this liberated zone, do they come by with a little, checklist? Like, okay, do you have any allergies?
They must.
Yeah, bananas, morphine, I don't
peanuts,
know.
Peanuts,
yeah.
Penicillin.
Fish, yeah. Then they got to go, oh, no, we got it. Anybody got any seafood? We got to get the seafood out of here now.
They saw the no banana signs. They waved them like settlers waving machine guns. Oh, that is just, that is rich. Yeah, so I don't know that Hunter's actually sued Fox or sent them a letter threatening to sue them.
Hunter Biden is planning to sue Fox News. According to a letter from his lawyers, the lawsuit is imminent. NBC's Ryan Nobles joins me now. Ryan, what more can you tell us?
Yeah, that's right, Chris. This is a letter obtained by NBC's Sarah Fitzpatrick that comes from the new attorney that Hunter Biden has entered into a contract with, and that's famed entertainment lawyer Mark Garagos. And in this letter, he sends a warning to the Fox News Corporation and Fox News Digital that they are preparing to sue the company for what they describe as conspiracy and subsequent actions to defame Mr. Biden and paint him in a false light, as well as the unlicensed commercial exploitation of his image, name and likeness, and the unlawful publication of hacked intimate images of him. And this, of course, stems from the fact that, of course, Hunter Biden has been in the news quite a bit over the past couple of years because of his legal issues. And then, of course, the broad impeachment inquiry that's taking place by the House of Representatives. And essentially what Garagos is arguing in this letter, it's actually a member of his legal team is arguing in this letter, is that Fox is unfairly and libelously attacking Hunter Biden when there are no merits to many of the claims that they've been making.
Yeah, that doesn't work that way. When you have photographs of him smoking crack, they're photographs of him smoking crack. They're
yeah, not... tell that to Marion Barry.
Yeah.
For publishing intimate images of him from his laptop, I think he lost ownership of that, of those images. They're no longer his images because he gave up the laptop. He surrendered the laptop. That includes the contents, I would imagine, right?
Yes.
About him. Now, this, of course, comes at the same time that Hunter Biden is facing legal issues of his own. He is on the verge of facing two different criminal trials, one in Delaware on a gun charge, another separate criminal trial in California that's related to tax issues. Both of those trials came as a result of a plea deal with the federal government that fell apart. So this is Hunter Biden going on the offensive. Of course, he is a favorite topic of Fox News.
I mean, how could you not? It's like a train wreck. You can't look away from that stuff on the laptop. And it's in the news. It's newsworthy. Now Fox is getting in trouble for reporting news.
Yeah, and he is a public figure. So
certainly is. Yeah. A well-known, acclaimed artist. Right?
There's a reason why this is not an actual lawsuit. And this is just a letter. A scare letter.
We might do it. We're going to sue you.
This is like the third or fourth one that his lawyers have tried to send out to different places, and it's not gone anywhere because there's no merit to it.
You put your weenie on a photograph, and it ended up on your laptop. You lost the laptop. Your schlong is it's out there.
I believe it's registered in the Library of Congress right now.
It is. With six Skittles on it.
Often brought up over and over again. And what is detailed in this letter is how they used many of the images that came from that so-called laptop that was discovered in the midst of the 2020 campaign that had a number of compromising and questionable and somewhat lewd images of
indeed.
Hunter Biden that have been used.
I don't know. Your brother's widow S-ing your D while holding a cigarette in between your fingers?
Who is also this idiot reporting that used the word so-called laptop? It's a laptop.
It's Fox.
It's a laptop.
You're right. So-called laptop. Was he just referring to that's the nickname for it? Or that it was?
It's a laptop that had images on it. It's not a so-called laptop. It's not like they made up this laptop.
Right.
Fox News, the argument here is that they were obtained illegally. They should not have been used in a forum such as this. And also, they're his property. And they're arguing that Fox News was using them inappropriately. So we'll have to see where this comes. Again,
are they technically his property?
He willingly gave up the property ownership of it with the images were on there. It doesn't matter.
His dad is now officially the least popular president for at least the last 70 years. And a new poll. A 38.7% job approval rating for the first quarter of 2024. The Gallup poll, found in a survey released Friday, 3 points lower than that of one-term George H.W. Bush at the same point in his presidency. And, you know, thank God Jimmy Carter lived to see the day. Does he know it? Someone wake up, Jimmy. Mr. President, you're no longer the worst president ever.
Honestly, I think that's the only thing keeping him alive right now.
What, did he pass this point?
Yeah, he's being sustained. His health is just driven on by the fact that his poll numbers, that, you know, Biden's poll numbers are so terrible. It's keeping Jimmy alive.
Mr. President, I've got good news.
Uh-oh, Jimmy's failing. Someone go grab the newest poll numbers.
The list. Where is the list? Here it is. He's compared to other U.S. presidents 39 months into their presidency, the lowest of any elected president in modern American history. Ronald Reagan was a 54.5. Nixon, 53.7. Clinton, 53. W at 51%. Jimmy Carter at 47.7. Donald Trump at 46.8. Barack Obama at 45.9. What? H at 41.8. And Biden at 38.7. That stinks. Does he get reelected?
I mean, he shouldn't. I mean, you would think that one of the least popular presidents of all time would not get reelected, but who knows?
You would think it. You would think it. Jerry Seinfeld made some comments over the weekend about comedy. And he really nailed it. Don't tell me I don't have this. Jesus, Palomino. We got to get our audio thing in. I've got to get it in gear. He's not wrong. Will you find it real quick? Mm-hmm. Oh, here it is.
It used to be you would go home at the end of the day. Most people would go, oh, Cheers is on. Oh, MASH is on. Oh, Mary Tyler Moore is on. All in the Family's on. You just expected there'll be some funny stuff we can watch on TV tonight. Well, guess what? Where is it? Where is it? This is the result of the extreme left and PC crap and people worrying so much about offending other people. Mm-hmm. Now they're going to see stand-up comics because we are not policed by anyone. The audience polices us. We know when we're off track. Mm-hmm. We know instantly, and we adjust to it instantly. But when you write a script and it goes into four or five different hands, committees, groups, here's our thought about this joke, well, that's the end of your comedy.
Have you had that experience?
No.
Because isn't that what Curb is all about?
Yeah. Larry was grandfathered in. He's old enough that I don't have to observe those rules because I started before you made those rules.
Wow. He's grandfathered in.
Yeah, because I think he was popular enough that he could get away with doing what he wanted to do. But look at it now. Oh. I mean, really, back 90s, you know, or late 90s, early 2000s, everyone knew what the Friday night comedy lineup was.
Yes.
TGI Friday, you know, all the other comedy lineups. Everyone knew what they were, must-watch TV.
They're gone.
Could you name a sitcom on TV right now?
Sitcom? No. I mean, I used to watch Sanford and Son was the thing, All in the Family, The Jeffersons, Good Times. All of those were, you couldn't get away with any of them today. I don't think you could get, maybe Good Times, but you couldn't get away with the other ones. You couldn't get away with All in the Family. I mean, that was hysterical. It's funny today. I think it's, there's funny stuff.
Yeah, I think the only comedy one I could name off the top of my head right now is Young Sheldon. I've never watched an episode of it. I just know that is a comedy one that's on TV right now.
But is he, it's different for stand-ups, I think, than it is for sketch comedy. And that's what he's talking about is sitcom television, you know. There may be things that on his show that you wouldn't get, you couldn't get away with now.
Oh, definitely. It's like we had a, last year when
the woman's name, it sounded like a female body part. We didn't know what it was. And then finally, the ending's, ah, Dolores.
When Friends finally got on Netflix and over, and then over kids over in the UK were watching, like the Gen Z young millennials were all watching. Going,
right.
Oh my God, how was this on TV? I was going, you're talking about Friends, right?
Friends?
Yeah. And they, yeah, well, you look back and they made fun of transgenders. They made fun of gay people. They
look at Monty Python for the love of Pete.
But you're going, Friends?
Friends is the most harmless thing on television, I thought.
Yeah, it was over in the UK when they finally got the chance to watch it. They were like, oh, this is like supposedly the American sitcom. And they sat down and watched it. Oh, my God, this is so horrible. There's so much bad stuff in this.
Kim has been watching the UK kids trying American food. Have you seen that? Yeah. Like, they see, get biscuits and gravy. They're disgusted by it. Look, it's disgusting. And then they take a gravy. This is great. And this is not a biscuit. And they take a bite. Oh, my God, it's delicious. I can't believe how good it is. But he makes a point. It's the extreme left ruining comedy. And it's the extreme left that have embedded themselves as the gatekeepers of what's proper for television.
Yeah, it's the writers. It is. When you look at...
Is it the writers or is it somebody else?
It is a lot of the writers have embedded themselves... Well, the people that want to make those changes...
It's the left. They run Hollywood.
...have embedded themselves as the writers that have changed that thing. It used to be you look at a show and they had maybe five or six writers. You knew who they were, and they that was where it went through. And they were the ones who were the mind behind the show. They were the comedy. That's who made the show. You look at them nowadays, though, and the writer's list is like 20 people long, which means it went through two guys and then went through a third guy, then went through a fourth guy. And each time they've made a pass where they say, oh, we got to take this joke out because it's offensive. We got to take – there's too many guys in this scene. We got to take them out and put two girls into the scene.
Right. If there's not enough black kids in the scene, let's get one. Yeah. You know, look at commercials.
I mean, there's actual companies now that are – they call themselves diversity companies, and you agree to send your script to them, and they go through and they write up through, they go through your script and they X out
things. They
don't
punch it up. They punch it down.
Yeah. You take this out. You can't have that. Oh, there's not enough. You got to put a cultural thing in here.
But when these things happen at this scale and these leftist people have embedded themselves where they have this control, there always is a rogue element that escapes it. Tucker Carlson is one of them. You know what I mean? In the news area. Mel Gibson and Mark Wahlberg are starting a new unwoke production company, you know, that's going to counter program, you know, the big studios in Hollywood. I would expect for television to be that way at some point.
They've been struggling to get out of that, mainly because to be on TV, you have to go through all those executives. You have to go through that to find... you know how many scripts are thrown away before they ever get a day one? They never go into production. They're just the first script. They never get in there, even though they're probably great shows, but they're tossed away because they don't fit whatever bill they need to be.
Right.
It's Chappelle said the right thing. Seinfeld said the right thing, and being that fact that stand up can get away with this still because they can be like Chappelle.
Right. They're independent.
Where Chappelle can go, I don't care if you listen to my jokes or not. I can still fill the arena with the people that want to listen to my jokes.
Right,
I can
sell a $20 million special to Netflix.
Yeah.
And so people protest Netflix, and Netflix is like, well, look, people like it. We're not going to take it off the format, off the platform.
But right now, if it's something like a sitcom, it's being gatekeeped. You can't get any farther along because of the fact that they're going to go, it would have to be something, it would have to be grassroots. It'd have to be something like South Park.
Yeah.
Where South Park started as...
they're grandfathered in?
Well, they're still grandfathered in. They go both ways on the comedy. But they were also they were made originally, if I remember the story, as like a digital greeting card that they sent around to a bunch of you know, executives and things like that.
That was
the very first episode, the pilot episode with them killing, with Jesus coming back and fighting Satan. And they sent that out to all these places, and they got picked up on that. So it would have to be something that kind of gets a groundswell thing, a YouTube show that for some reason just hits like crazy. And
Drea De Mateo was on Don Jr.'s podcast. And she claims that a lot of prominent celebrities are just like her, against Biden's agenda, but they're petrified. They're too scared to speak. She changed her opinions on certain issues, illegal immigration. She previously voted for Biden based on sympathy for illegal immigrants. But now the chaos at the border has changed her mind. She shows up in a MAGA hat to do the to do the thing. And she says, yeah, I feel like a lot of those guys are leftist liberals, even her former co-stars. But she said, people don't have the guts to come out and say it. She said, a lot of people agree with me. A lot of Hollywood, you know, A-list actors agree with me. They're just too afraid to speak out because they think I don't know what will happen to you. What could happen to you?
They could just get rid of you. Unless you're a big enough star that you can basically just swing and D your way through and say, I don't care what they say. And there's very few of them. Because most of the time, even the ones that are like that have to kind of back out of it. You look at someone like Chris Pratt.
Right.
Very, very Christian guy.
Right.
You know, he has a lot of beliefs that you would assume would probably lay across on the right side. And he has to a lot of times be kind of like, no, I'm more center because he wants to keep getting right. movie roles.
She said, I really, you know, she considers herself a liberal in a certain sense. She's been against modern far left trends for a very long time. She's only been open about it recently. She said, I really did want to fight, but I didn't think that A, I had the voice, B, or the balls, and everything changed. I got thrown to the wolves. And once I was out there, I was like, well, I'm out here. Well, what am I going to do? I may as well just, you know, do what I got to do. I guess she's not getting acting roles. That's why she turned to OnlyFans, right?
I think she said she made more money on that than she'd made during her entire acting career. So,
yeah,
I don't think she cares.
She's pretty smoking hot. Well, I don't know. I think that you have those that come out. They're kind of, well, they're against Biden. They voted for him once. They've changed their mind this time around. Is it because they're going to vote for Trump this time around, or because they're not, you know, giving Biden a hand job like everybody else and calling him decent?
Look at The Rock. He came out and said, I'm not voting for Biden, but I'm not telling you who to vote for. And you thought they were going to burn him at the stake.
Yeah. He's too big to cancel, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, we'll take too many of those. Kristi Noem definitely out as the VP pick.
Yes. Mainly because she's an idiot.
I mean, you live on a ranch and you've got a problem dog that's attacking other livestock, you know, eating chickens and biting people. That's just what you do.
But you don't write a book about it.
I certainly would never have put it in a book.
It's an unfortunate thing that you have to do sometimes, and it definitely is not something that I would be celebrating.
Yeah. Why would she put it in there? Is it to make her seem tough?
And I think that's what it was for, to make her seem like, oh, I'm such a down-home country girl.
We've seen enough
girl.
Pictures of her riding horses and shooting rifles and having a six, you know, a sidearm holstered next to her. So
sometimes you don't need to see how the sausage is made.
Right. I mean, I watched my grandfather put down a calf. That had a broken leg. It broke its leg somehow. That's just what you got to do, you know?
There's a lot of unfortunate things that need to be done on a farm that people don't ever see, but there's no reason to celebrate it or write it in a book. It just puts you out there.
That was a big move. You think our editor would have caught that, right? Are you sure you want to put this bit in here? Yes, I'm tough.
All right.
Yeah, I don't know. She's off the list. Definitely off the list?
Yes. I think that's...
Trump can't make a bad pick in that regard.
You can't have... Because they'll just put a puppy killer across every news station in the world.
All right. When we return, we'll get you Heather Has Answers. I remember the student that beat the brakes off a Florida school teacher, autistic student. Then she's suing, she doesn't want to go light on him. She's not dropping the charges, which the school wanted her to drop the charges.
And she's right to not.
Hell no. You don't drop those charges. His name is Brendan Deppa. He has filed a lawsuit against Flagler County Public Schools. They've apparently failed to meet his needs. Hang on, it's the Shannon Burke Show.
Let us go.
the 18-year-old massive autistic kid that violently attacked a teacher's aide because they took away his Nintendo game has filed a lawsuit against the school district, accusing it of failing to make interventions to address his bad behavior, even though he was said to be a ticking time bomb. He's accused Flagler County Public Schools of failing to meet his needs in the lead up to the incident.
Yeah, his needs were he needed to be locked up because he's violent.
6'2", 270. Broken ribs, got a concussion, lost hearing in one of her ears. He was refused permission to use a Nintendo Switch console. That's what drove him. In the lawsuit, they say the district should be held to account for its failures, which have forever changed the trajectory of this young man's life. Is it the school's job? I mean, do they know? They knew he had being diagnosed with the autism spectrum disorder, right?
Yes, they know what he is.
But, I mean, shouldn't the parents properly address it?
They should, but there are some people. This is unfortunately a kid that is, you know, massively, he's oversized.
Explosive anger. Had they tried to kick him out of school, they would probably have been sued as well. So now they're sued because they kept him in school, and I don't know, what could they have done? Chain him to a wall? They ignored his needs for special and pragmatic language interventions that should have provided him with direct instructions on how to problem solve and express himself. He spat on a student and verbally threatened another by saying the student should die. Also said he should have shot a student. They say the lawsuit argues that the school had not properly dealt with those incidents. Had these incidents been addressed in real time, he would have not harmed the paraprofessional and would not have been arrested, facing significant time incarcerated. They said that he was reprimanded in front of his peers. Well, oh my word.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a tragedy. You think this goes anywhere?
No. Well, maybe. Sadly, I think the school system throws out some cash to get this to go away. But unfortunately, there is no way, because this kid should have been sent to a school that's an institution for children like this. Where, again, there are no schools that are properly equipped with a therapist to handle a 6'6", 270-pound kid.
Yeah, no kidding. He had three prior misdemeanor battery charges?
Yeah, this isn't the first person he's beaten up.
What the hell is that kid doing in a public classroom, public school? It's really a double-edged sword here. But if the school were to segregate him or treat him differently than the rest of the class, they would also have a problem with that. I mean, how many times did your teacher reprimand you in front of the whole class? That's the only time I ever got reprimanded by a teacher.
I mean, the whole thing is coming from the fact that she took the Nintendo Switch. Why did he have a Nintendo Switch in the first place taken to school?
Because he's special.
Yeah. Because nobody's told him no before.
Yeah.
Because they're afraid of him.
He's being charged as an adult, and he's facing some serious time. And the teacher, this is Nadich, she's got, you know, serious injuries, slowed speech, difficult with routine cognitive functions, hearing loss in an eye. Or in ear, hearing loss in her eye. Did you hear about that? It's terrible. She's probably suing the school district as well, isn't she? I would imagine. You let that kid loose in there. I mean, the school is responsible for him attacking her. not for the reason he attacked her, but for failing to protect her from him.
Yeah, because this teacher did nothing wrong.
You know, they walked. I mean, they treated this kid with kid gloves because, I mean, if you said you should have shot a student in a normal, if you're just a, you know, a student without autism, you're suspended. You're out of there. Your parents are called. Whatever. It's a big deal. You know, people with hit lists writing them on paper are being suspended and expelled from schools. If you spit on another student, the White House has denied that there was a secret plot to outscreen Jean-Pierre, KJP.
So there was a secret
that
plot.
Definitely there was a plot to get rid of KJP. They say they've had to issue a statement. The Deputy Press Secretary Andy Bates rejected these claims. Multiple sources knew about it. It included longtime senior advisor Anita Dunn, White House Chief of Staff Jeff Zients supported the story as well. And they were trying to get other prominent outside Democrats to urge her to voluntarily make her exit. I guarantee you that's what happened here. She's passed her time. How long she's been there since, what's her nuts?
Yeah, since Jen Psaki, so a year and 2 years, almost 2 years now.
Wasn't there somebody before Jen Psaki? No, she was from the get-go.
I think that's part of their the reforming of the campaign they want, is they need a new voice, and they're afraid that she's not getting the job done.
She's not getting the job done, but she's guaranteed, they'll never get rid of her.
Oh, yeah, she has social immunity.
She's a black lesbian, non-binary, whatever it is.
She could just be there until she dies.
Oh, yeah, she could have that job forever. They're trying to find her a graceful exit to avoid removing her against her will. It's a huge diversity issue. They're afraid of what folks might say. At least one person outside the administration spoke to Jean-Pierre that the plan had not yet and it was unlikely to lead to her departure. She's been pretty consistent in telling people from the minute she got the job that she was going to stay through the election. She's decided to stay come hell or high water. And that's the end of it. Some people say she doesn't really have an understanding of the issues. well, yeah, she ain't going.
They're going to have to drag her kicking and screaming out of that spot.
They're going to have to call one of their friends at MSNBC and say, listen, you need to dangle some money in front of this. We need to get rid of her. We can't really fire her because it looks really bad. And then they got to come up with somebody more diverse to fill her shoes, right? They better have a Hispanic,
transgender, yes. Hispanic, immigrant.
Hi, my name is Maria. I'm from Spain.
Heather.
Hello.
Hold on.
You ready for this?
Yes, do it.
She can't wait to get up in your business.
Yes. Yes.
So indulge her. Send her your highly personal, deeply disturbed questions to heatherhasanswers@gmail.com.
All right.
I like it.
Yeah.
All right. A 13-year-old girl in our neighborhood keeps coming to the door. And last week, she approached me outside my house, regular middle-class neighborhood, to ask if she could charge her mobility scooter. I, of course, said sure and offered to sit inside with her while she waited. To my surprise, this girl, who looked roughly 19 or 20, was actually 13. She's taller than I am, and I'm in my mid-40s. She sat around for a while, refused snacks, and eventually asked to spend the night multiple times. I gently probed her to see if she felt safe at home, and she said that she did. So I told her she can't stay the night. If she had felt unsafe at home, I would have made a different decision, maybe CPS. So she left after a while, but since then, she keeps coming around. Mostly we catch her on the ring when nobody's home, but today we were home. I told her I wasn't well and it's not a good time, but she came back a couple hours later. I hid. I'm aware this girl is probably lonely, but I'm a middle-aged woman in a different race. I don't know if that matters. And she's literally a child. It's not appropriate to let her hang out without her guardian's knowledge or permission. Please help. I don't know what to do. I was trying to do a good deed for a young adult and somehow managed to get a very young teenager to think that she can come into my home whenever she wants. I'm also very much not up to being a free babysitter or entertainment for a random kid. Angie in St. Cloud.
Does she know where the kid lives?
it doesn't look like it. This girl showed up on a scooter that needed to be charged. So somewhere in the neighborhood, maybe? I don't really know.
Yeah. Where is she? Where is this?
St. Cloud.
St. Cloud. I would be, I hate to say this, but a strange kid that I haven't seen in the neighborhood around now hanging out, I would be worried about. If I was this woman, I'd be worried about her safety.
About the woman's safety or
yes,
the child?
Not the child, her safety.
Why not the child? I'm sorry, I'm feeling naive right now.
The kids, you know, criminals get younger and younger and younger. They're 11-year-olds jacking cars in D.C. I mean, this is a kid that you don't know from the neighborhood. Does it look familiar? You've never seen in your neighborhood. Wanted to get her scooter charged up. You know, it doesn't look good.
It's very odd. I had the first question I was going to ask you answered at the end when she said she was a middle-aged woman, because I was wondering if this was a guy, because this sounds a very hard candy-esque type of thing going, like she has a crush on him. And she may have a crush on this lady. I'm not, you know, assuming her sexuality that she might have that.
I would, if I was this woman, I would endeavor to learn more about her, where she lives, who her parents are, and would it be okay if this woman were to meet her parents or call her parents,
yes,
at least say hello, get to know them. Then you'd feel more comfortable about her hanging out if you wanted her to hang out. But, you know, also you want to let her know that you're a middle-aged woman. And
and their child just came up and acted like friends, and that's not okay. What if the child does that to the wrong house?
What if the child's packing a Saturday Night Special in her backpack?
And also,
I can't get there.
13-year-old is young, but a 13-year-old also isn't like an elementary school kid,
right?
That's a person that's, you know, heading out of middle school heading towards high school type of thing. They're not idiots, so the weird, like, the interaction that's going on, definitely something strange there.
Yeah.
You know, there's some naivety to, like, a 6-year-old that wants to come over and pet the cat that you have.
Sure.
Right.
And even then, you're like, okay, this is, the parents need to know where this kid is at. I, you know, I'm trying to keep myself out of trouble. But this, a 13-year-old, there's something more going on.
Yeah, I agree. Something, maybe something to do with her home life, you know, like she's got absentee parents or, so I would be, A, concerned about this woman's safety, and then B, if you want to know more about the girl, tell her you need to talk to her parents.
That's a good idea. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
All right. Dear Heather, Shannon, and EZ, I'm wondering if I'm an asshole for allegedly abandoning my stepdaughter. Freddie and I have been married for about a year now. All the names have been changed. And it's been a wonderful year, except for one thing. His 15-year-old daughter, Olivia, cannot stand me. Ever since we got married, Freddie's been pushing family trips and quality time between me and Olivia. I have no problem with it on paper, but Olivia does. Freddie and Olivia have gotten into many arguments over the fact that Olivia doesn't like me or want me in a relationship with her dad. Olivia says I'm not her mom, I never will be, and that she won't pretend I am. I've been conflicted on what to do. On one hand, Freddie is Olivia's parent, not me, so I don't really get a say in what rules he puts on her. On the other hand, I hate seeing Olivia so miserable every time we go out on a girls' trip or are sent for bonding time by Freddie. So I made a decision. I sat Freddie down and explained I wasn't comfortable.
It used to be you.
Sorry, go ahead.
Okay. I sat Freddie down and explained I wasn't comfortable with these family trips anymore, and I explained that Olivia would always have a place in our home. This is where her dad lives. After all, she belongs here as much as I do. And that, of course, I'd be there if she asked to spend time together or needed something, or if there was an absolute emergency that I had to take care of. But I wouldn't be going on these outings anymore because I wasn't comfortable and how upset they were making Olivia. Freddie was livid. He accused me of undermining his parenting decisions and abandoning Olivia by refusing refusing to fight for our family. I replied that I wasn't part of Olivia's family. She doesn't like me. She's made it clear I'll never be her mother. So I didn't see the point in forcing her to have mommy-daughter spa days or whatever else with me against her will. Freddie told me I need to reevaluate my priorities if I wanted to stay together, and accused me of wanting to cut his daughter out of the family before storming out. I'm gutted. Of course I don't want to cut Olivia out of our lives or family, but she's Freddie's daughter and I know she'll always come first to him, and I never want to sabotage their relationship or hurt her. That's why I don't want to keep forcing a bond between us, because that's hurting her and putting a wedge between them. I don't know. Did I overstep? Am I really hurting Olivia?
She was supposed to have some time with her and didn't?
Yeah, she's saying that she doesn't think the 15-year-old wants the time with her. So she's letting the 15-year-old dictate how she stepmothers.
You can't force them to hang out with each other.
Yeah.
Right. You can't.
I mean, she seems like a stepmom that's willing to. If the child wants to hang out with her, then she's willing to take her out. But you can't force a child to go out just because you want to make some weird, like, mommy connection.
Right.
The father wants to make some weird mom-daughter connection that neither of them seem to want.
Right.
Yeah. This is normal.
I think so, too.
Very normal for new, you know, remarried parents of younger kids.
I think so, too. She did add that Olivia is generally well-behaved and hasn't done anything drastic or overly disruptive. She's just a kid who's a bit standoffish and sarcastic sometimes when she's hurting over her parents' divorce or not seeing Freddie enough, but no one would believe she was a brat. So
she needs to let Freddie know that you know, his daughter doesn't want to be with her. Does he understand that?
I don't think he likes that.
Well, I mean, that's the truth. I mean, right. And you can't force it. I mean, she could go the cool mom route, you know.
I mean, she can just continue what she's doing. Say, hey, I'm going to the mall. Do you want to come along? No? Okay. That's as far as you can go. You can't say, all right, get your ass in the car. Right. We're going to the mall, because it's not going to do any better. She's just going to hate you more.
Yeah.
Yes. He's going to be worse and worse and worse. Yeah, just Freddie needs to come to his senses and realize that this is a thing, you know. It's not unusual. Get a book, you know. They got books about this stuff. my stepdaughter hates me.
So you're sad your mommy's gone.
Yeah. Or there might be one other. You're not my mom, you bitch. I mean, they all, you know, especially 15. But the good news is, well, you know, she's going to turn 16, and these things have a way of working themselves out over time, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Sooner or later, they're going to start wanting. She's either going to want to at some point, or she'll leave the house at 2 more years. So, I mean, you can't really fight it anymore.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily see it as Olivia hating Nina, the stepmom. It's just she's just being a very normal kid, and I don't know if she's in counseling about her parents' divorce, but I think the dad and the daughter need to possibly go to counseling, because it seems like Olivia is looking for her dad's approval over her new stepmom's.
Yes.
Or be the cool stepmom and, like, if I know she's
smoke
a big...
Smoke some weed with her.
Well, if I know she's a big, like, Taylor Swift fan and buy her Taylor Swift tickets, then she'll love
you.
Oh, you
could endear yourself. Oh. I mean...
Win her in a heartbeat.
Yeah. Or smoke weed with her. I don't know.
No, don't do that.
There's plenty of literature, you know, on this topic. Yeah, if a therapist is something, you know, they might be able to help. I don't know. A lot of people are into that, though, you know.
Yeah. Yep, yep.
I swear by it for the last 15 years.
I had one when I was really young, and it was great, but, like, I can totally recite all that stuff back to them now.
I never had one as a kid.
Not
only as an adult.
I don't think.
It wouldn't?
On Amazon, you can get a copy of Why Do Family Change? Our first talk about separation and divorce.
That sounds like a little lower than the 15-year-old. Yeah. That's like a 6-year or 7-year-old.
And there's also, like, groups that, at least, you know, back in the 90s, there are now groups for children whose parents are divorcing. Like, even if it's just through, like, a church or through therapists, that she could hang out with other kids that are dealing with the same thing. I don't think it sounds vindictive against the stepmom. I just think she's just... I mean, Nina sounds like a really cool stepmom.
I think you find something that the kid has interest in and try to share that interest with her somehow or another, or support it in some way. Hey, I thought you might like this. I know you're into Taylor. Here's her new album. Whatever, something like that. You know what I mean?
It's easy. Just buy them stuff.
Well, don't go overboard. I'm like, hey, I know you're getting your license until next year, but here's a new Camaro. You know?
Okay. $12 on Amazon. All right. Kid's Guide to Divorce and Life After It. Tips and Tricks and More.
A Kid's Guide?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Or Surviving Divorce. Teens Talk About What Hurts and Helps.
Hmm.
And it has a picture of a kid that looks like he's...
Hates his mother? Isn't his stepmother?
No, it looks like this book was maybe written in the 90s. He's got one of those glamour shots photos on the cover of the book. But he's sad.
See if there's one like Daddy's New Girlfriend's a Whore or anything like that.
But she's not. She's a nice person.
My daughter got along famously, probably better than with me, with Kim, because they swim. You know, they're both they're both big time swimmers. And Kim swam in college. Abby swam in college, and so that kind of, you know, they had something they shared. Plus, they just get along.
Well, I mean, Kim's really easy to get along with.
Yeah, well.
So.
Oh, here it is on Amazon, $25. So your new stepmom's a whore.
Anything else?
No, that's it for today.
That's all we got today. Heather has answers at gmail.com. You've probably made note of the new escape with Heather at gmail.com. That's especially for our audience members currently incarcerated by the state or any other municipality for that reason or county. Heather, and you got to have access to emails. That will be a state facility, right?
Right.
Escape with Heather about, you know, the everyday doldrums of incarceration.
Wouldn't that be hilarious if the prison actually like blocked my email because it suggests Escape with Heather?
Oh, No.
Okay.
They don't actually think you're working on getting them out.
Yeah, they don't think you're actually getting. Yeah, Heather's gonna.
I'm gonna get arrested. I'm gonna take you.
We've uncovered the plot, Heather. Once some troopers come up here to the station to talk to you about your email correspondence with Rocky.
So it seems 25. Here that he was trying to fight a lion, but every other word seemed to also be an escape plan.
It's true.
Well. It was that one or the, what was the other one?
Heather's
visiting day.
That one might raise more eyebrows than Escape with Heather. Visiting day with Heather.
I don't know.
Plus that leads to a bunch of raunchy. They can't really send out raunchy stuff, I don't think.
No, they can't.
Yeah. Thank you, Heather. Heather has answers at gmail.com. We do it every day around this time here. When we return, we'll get to your remarks. Plus, California is getting a new, I guess every state is going to get a state dollar coin in 2026. And the governor there wants, this is going to be, a coin is going to be honored the state's innovation. Newsom made the mistake of calling upon the citizens of California to make some suggestions. And as you can imagine, they're awesome. Hang on, it's the Shannon Burke Show. So, Governor Newsom gets wind. We got these new dollar coin coming out of state coin to honor the state's innovations. I guess the federal, every state gets one because the mint, it's a federal, it's currency.
Yeah.
And I guess, I don't know if every state's doing innovation or not. But he said, calling all members of the tortured coin designers department, California is getting its own $1 coin to honor innovation slated to be issued 2026, and we need your help. What is a California innovation you'd like to see featured on the coin? Well, one guy said, the coin should depict the homeless encampment in a fire.
So the U.S. Mint is releasing 4 new dollar coins honoring American innovations from 4 of the 50 states each year. So
okay,
they get theirs in 2026.
One user superimposed Harvey Weinstein's picture on the coin to provide provided by Newsom, saying, "When people think of California, they think of Hollywood. This would be great." Another user pointed out that many of the problems California is faced with, telling the governor a coin contest seems totally out of touch and ridiculous. The same user suggested that Newsom contact Governor Ron DeSantis to put him on there, or how to run a successful state. More suggestions. A wildfire, electric batteries, and a mask symbolizing the COVID pandemic. And the bottom of the coin, it reads, "In Newsom we trust." Other ones suggested placing illegal immigrants on the coin, high gas prices, or somebody shooting up drugs. That would be a collector coin, wouldn't it? Someone just bent over at the waist in San Francisco somewhere.
Just a guy, like, he's pulling the straps tight with his teeth so he can use his other hand.
All right. Yeah, that is a that's a bad idea. We saw a lot of the Patriot Front out again, marching, probably to counter all of the anti-Israel stuff. Maybe the Patriot Front, all guys virtually the same size, nobody overweight, all wearing the same khaki trousers and the same shirt, and all wearing masks, bandanas that cover their face, sunglasses, and baseball caps.
Yeah, almost like clones of each other.
Yeah. And they're allegedly some, you know, white nationalist group. And they just show up and march around and say racist stuff. And then they always depict them arrested, like, we finally got the bad guys, these racist Patriot Front. And they're all on their knees with their hands zip-tied, still wearing their masks and their sunglasses, which I don't know any cop that's going to arrest somebody and allow them to wear a mask and sunglasses.
Also, this is like the fifth time they've been arrested. Have you ever seen police reports about it?
No.
I mean, when you arrest a guy, normally they go fingerprint in. You know who all these people are. You know their names. You know where they live. We would be able to find now who all everybody that's been with the Patriot Front.
Right. And they just sit there with their masks on, completely anonymous.
It is literally, they went, oh my God, all these college campuses, they're getting to the point where they're yelling the final solution. They're really getting into really Nazis. Let's send our pretend Nazi group out.
Is that to make everybody think that this?
Yeah, I think they throw these guys out there every once in a while when they need to go, oh, well, I mean, look, come on, the guys on the right are still a Nazi, racist bastards. Look at them come out there and they want to, America.
It's not just these liberal kids at college campuses, right? They always march them out. They showed up at Republican candidates' events and just stand there holding a flag or tiki torches or something stupid like that. I don't get it.
I mean, have you ever, how many white supremacist groups do we know that we know exactly who the leader is?
Right. Yeah.
We know who the leaders of the Proud Boys were. We know who the leaders of the KKK were. We knew all the, but we know nothing about this group.
That's true. Delta Air Flight itself is just, it's the whole industry is a wreck. You know, the big yellow slide, if there's an emergency, you got to get off the plane on the tarmac. There's no staircase available. It's air rolls out. It's a very massive piece of equipment. Well, one fell off. It wasn't deployed. It was all packed in its little thing. One fell off a Delta flight as it was departing from JFK. And they had to turn around, and they found the lost ramp, washed up in front of a lawyer's home, waterfront home, 6 miles away. The lawyer, whose firm is currently suing Boeing for the Alaska Airlines door blowout. And I guess they're suing Delta. And it fell off a Delta Boeing 767 jetliner and landed in his yard. Case closed, right? I mean, at that point.
Yeah, that's like the worst place it possibly could have landed.
He said, I don't want to touch it, but I got close enough to get a close look at it. Our case is all about safety issues at Boeing, and this slide is literally right in my front yard, in front of my house. Wow. My neighbor called the FAA hotline. They're closed on Sundays. So then he just called Delta, and I saw this Delta truck pull up. It took them 10 minutes to get there, and they pulled it out of the water. Man, it didn't take Delta long at all to come get that stuff, did it?
Yeah, but I love the FAA. I was like, Monday, we'll get it.
Closed on Sundays.
Government, you know.
Thanks for calling the FAA. Your call is important to us.
There's a piece of a wing. Press 1.
Yeah.
The door has come off. Press 2.
Wow. Yeah. So, is it not an official FAA incident if Delta went and got it? That the FAA just doesn't overlook an emergency slide falling off a plane and landing in some guy's yard.
No, I think they would be quite upset about that. And I'm sure they're going to be quite upset the fact that Delta ran out there and grabbed it.
I bet they are. Oh, yeah. They would have to. They need to see it. FAA needs to see it. Well, maybe you should have someone answer the phones on Sundays.
Delta was like, yeah, we went and grabbed it. The moment we picked it up, we pulled the cord. We had to stab it a couple times, get deflated. Nothing we can do about it, guys. Sorry.
I mean, I'm guessing it didn't deploy. Like, it was still in its, you know, packaging.
Yeah, still in the packaging.
Yeah. Former NBC News reporter Ben Collins. He was NBC's disinformation reporter. He now has become the CEO. And I guess he owns part of the fake news website, The Onion.
Just the jokes write themselves on it.
It really does. He covered disinformation, extremism, and the internet for NBC. He said he has not tried to hide his left-wing political leanings. He fired off a bunch of liberal missives on social media. He was furious over Elon Musk's takeover of Twitter that he reportedly got him temporarily banned from covering him in 2022. He fumed over the reporting about the Twitter files that revealed internal communications between Twitter employees as they made the decision to block the New York Post story on the laptop. He threatened to leave journalism unless, quote, things dramatically change. He had one story published since then, which was a critical piece on Musk's handling of Twitter. Now he's running. The Onion is not funny. When it comes to satirical news sites, the Babylon Bee.
Okay, and they just ran it into the ground.
The Babylon Bee is just, because it's right leaning and it's hysterical. In his final stretch on NBC, even more headlines from about his social media posts. He was angered by the media's reporting of the plagiarism scandal. He didn't like that at all. This guy's really...
Oh, so you know The Onion is going to be hilarious now with this guy there.
It's been around since 1988, The Onion. It's now seen as the liberal version of the Babylon Bee. Well, good luck, buddy.
I don't know. Let's see what a Onion headline looks like currently right now.
They're not funny.
Because I like the Babylon Bee one literally was just nations no longer worried about communist takeover after liberal campus destroyed by banana.
That is pretty funny, that whole banana story. Now the guys are, looks like the guy's got a suicide vest with nothing but bananas all around it. And he's got bananas in his hands.
currently trending on The Onion is Americans explain why we should call the National Guard on college protesters. That's an actual, should be a headline.
Wait, yeah. That's
not satirical in any way.
It's not satirical at all.
Mom, pretty jealous of all the D teenage daughter going to pull with highlights, with those highlights. Taylor Swift fan convinced artist purposely released Big Dud as commentary on music industry.
Chirp, chirp.
Forced to pay for students Plan B out of pocket.
That's none of that. That's not funny. It's not even. Is it really?
Disney unveils new mass grave where fans can be buried alive with favorite characters forever.
All right.
I'm trying to find the satire on it.
I'm trying to find the humor. Wasn't it supposed to be humorous?
Well, I mean, at least satirical in any way, but
they're almost real headlines.
Yeah, that's the sad part about it.
Well, now is. I don't know, is this on his work? Because
it can't get much worse.
No,
honestly,
it hasn't been funny at all. I don't recall it ever being. I always found it being just left leaning anger.
Yeah, but it used to be to the point where I think people could be tricked by the satire. Like you look at the headline, you go, okay, that's kind of funny, but it's not. You know, obviously that's not a real headline.
A teacher buying a kid's morning after pill out of their own pocket. What is?
I don't know. That sounds like something a teacher would do nowadays anyway.
Well, it's also fairly complacent about a teenage pregnancy. I don't get it. I don't. And this guy's coming from reporting disinformation and extremism. He's an extremist.
Well, there was a reason it was bankrupt and they sold it off. So,
Well, he's not going to help. Shall we get to these remarks?
Yes.
From the Florida Man Radio app and powered by Morganic Meats, it's time for your remarks. Just don't be stupid.
All right. I don't have to say that anymore.
Nope.
I feel compelled to say it anyway, though, for some reason. Hit the little button at the bottom, and we're off to the races. The app is a great place for archives and to take the station with you wherever you go. Here we go.
Well, if they want to divest from Israel completely, they better turn in their cell phones, because Israel is behind many patents and technology involved with cellular infrastructure and handset chip design. So, yeah, turn over your phones.
Yeah. They're all hypocrites.
Hunter Biden should keep his laptop and his wiener to himself. Be-doo, be-doo.
He should have.
What's up, boys? Cole in Atlanta. I'm with you, EZ, on the Sheldon, Young Sheldon show. Like, I haven't seen one episode of it either. I think I'd be wasting my time. I wouldn't get that 30 minutes back of my life. The shows aren't what they used to be. You know, you got Seinfeld. I haven't watched one episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm, but I'm about to check that out.
Man, it's hysterically funny.
It just shows how bad that they are when more people are binge-watching old shows.
Right.
Like, I probably watched Scrubs multiple times, How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah, that's hysterical. It's funny.
You know, Community, I've watched
Two and a Half Men, I'm watching that like crazy. And I think that the Young Sheldon was a spinoff of
The Big Bang.
Bang, which I think is the last funny sitcom that also tiptoed. They didn't get into controversial stuff, but they were still managed to be pretty damn funny.
Yeah, Colin Atlanta again, part two on that, on the sitcoms. Sometimes, like, I have antenna TV, and I'll go through these channels, and sometimes I'll find some gold, like some old Married with Children episodes or Home Improvement episodes or, you know, whatever. But, like, you can tell just by watching these shows. I mean, they make you laugh your ass off, but they're so, like, they would never survive today, ever.
Hey, Shannon. Guy in one room, phone in the other room. Guy, listening to Friday's show, you were trying to get Heather to play EZ's music. She finally came on and said, "Oh, sorry, I was on an important phone call." I think it was her brother calling, telling her to stop buying cheap snacks for her kids at Aldi, or he's going to get his apartment key back.
She was on the phone with Mary, apparently.
Tunde Tono, as the son of a wonderful woman who worked at the county school for the mentally and physically handicapped in South Florida, I can tell you that retard strength is a thing. And, you know, I know people get offended by that word, but damn, dude, they're all strong as hell. That's not a pejorative. They're all strong as hell. And you should never, ever underestimate it. It's like people on PCP. It's weird.
You say 6'6", 270 with a violent propensity. I think we need to get down there and make a recruiting visit. Sounds like the man for Alabama defense line.
I mean, the kid was, what, 17, 18? He could have played. That might have been good for him.
Yeah, he should have probably been put into those things. But, again, as I've coached before, there are some kids that have those anger issues that you can't. They're not. Right. You're never going to get to them.
Hey, what's up, guys? Yeah, about that little girl coming over to the house, that's kind of crazy, you know? It could be both ways. It could be she's lonely and maybe she likes the girl, you know, the woman. If not, normally what that is she comes around, you let her in your house, she scopes out your house,
yeah,
and then she comes back with her friends later on, possibly when you're not home, tries to steal your keys or your ID or something like that. So, yeah, she needs to be careful. Beetle, beetle, rare it out, love the show.
Hey, Shando, E, Heather, F-dub in the tub up here in Okaloosa Island. Just drinking daiquiris on a Monday. Really hate Mondays, man. After roofing for 42 years, I said, you know what? I'm never going to work on a Monday. Anyway, getting back to that girl that's in the moped that's showing up that girl's house. Guess what? No way, man. She's coming in there. She's casing the joint. She's looking to rob you. Get out of it. 19 years old? No way.
Hey, folks, those of you with the problems asking for help, could you limit it to like 100 words? Some of these scenarios are longer than roots. Beedoo.
Heather has answers at gmail.com, by the way.
Hey, this 13-year-old could be casing the place and just waiting for the most opportune moment to do something nefarious.
Yeah. I agree. She's casing the joint. And she said she was a different race.
Yeah, I don't know what that means.
Yeah, I don't know either.
But it's very odd. I definitely would be no way. You're not hanging. No 13-year-old kid is hanging around my house that I don't know who they are.
Nope.
Shannon, my advice for the stepmom is to leave it alone and tell her husband to leave it alone. I've been through this, plenty of experience. When you do not show the attention, she will come around. Do not push it. And mainly it's because of the father, not the stepmom.
Hmm.
Yeah, I think we should put on the back of that coin, I think we should put a big fence with an immigrant climbing over, you know, illegal immigrant. God darn it. Love you.
California should put a picture of Xi Jinping on that coin, along with the hammer and sickle for being communist.
The coin will be Xi Jinping handing two pandas over.
Yeah. Shan's on another guy. It'll one hung low, like always. I got a suggestion for California coin. You can have a homeless guy take a dump on the side of the street, or you can have a Whoopi Goldberg at beach wearing thong. Oh, that's a nightmare for me. No Whoopi. Okay, got to go. Bad dreams tonight.
A hobo hunched over and dropping a deuce on the sidewalk will be hysterically funny. Why would you ever ask people for their input?
Because he's an idiot who thinks that people are going to like him. I honestly do believe he thinks the state of California likes him, even though they've tried to repeal him twice.
He's got great hair and teeth. I'll give him that.
Hey, guys. Also from Tampa. Great show. Just want to say good to see you guys out there at Leesburg Bike Fest. It was a good event to be at this weekend. So whoever missed it this year, highly recommend going out there next year.
That was a great time. Thanks for all that came out. And thanks to Lexi and especially to Randy, our engineer, who made it absolutely perfect.
So when Joe Biden went with his dad to get his license, was he getting his CDL to drive big semi-trucks, or was it a regular driver's license the day they witnessed the two gay men back in, what was it, the 1950s, kissing and in love on a park bench next to the driver's license facility? The man's so full of, you know what, bunka, his eyes are brown.
He told Stern again that he was arrested off a black family's front porch in a civil rights march.
Which is a lie.
Complete lie.
And Stern just ate it up.
Man. He's Italian, Puerto Rican, Jewish, big with Somalian cab drivers, Greek, got his education in the black church, and his roots are in Ireland. He is everybody.
Yeah, he's a cultural chameleon.
Come on.
I like Pop-Tarts. Why? Is there not a movie about Pop-Tarts? Maybe I should make one.
Yeah, that dude definitely needs to check out Curb Your Enthusiasm. And He's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Incredible.
Yeah, I watched.
That's another good
That's
one,
a good
yeah.
one.
Star Trek guy here. You want to watch some inappropriate TV? He's right. Go back to those rabbit ears and check out Game Show Network. Some of those 60s and 80s, the host is hitting on them. One girl was abused by her husband. She admitted it online, or right there on film. And then all the people were just like, you didn't do well. I hope your husband doesn't beat you. Oh, those are classics. Beedoo.
Wow.
Oh, the old ones? Yeah.
Bob Eubanks?
Yeah, the old...
I had Bob Eubanks in a studio once years ago, And he, the in the butt comment, mm-hmm. where's the strangest place you've ever made whoopee? In the butt.
Yeah, that one's great. Those were classic because they weren't manufactured. Now, if you watch like Family Feud now, they manufacture those badly. Like Steve Harvey will be like, well, what is your, yeah. what does your woman say that your man has something that's very small on him all the time?
Well, does Family Guy and Squidbillies, Aqua Teen, Hunger Force, do those count as sitcom? Because that's my bag, baby. Beedoo-beedoo.
Star Trek guy, sorry. The game I used to love to watch was Match Game. Yeah. That host was so dirty, and they made him say such great things. Go back and watch those. They are hilarious. Beedoo-beedoo.
Hey, onion things are so unfunny. I won't even do them.
Now, he could have been better if he had said he'd been hired to write for them.
Right. Yeah, he ought to apply. One more.
Yeah, I was going to join that Patriot front, but when I went to orientation, they were watching the best clips of The View, and they were asking me what my pronouns were and what color blue hair do I like on my girlfriend. I had a weird feeling about those dudes.
Oh, they're all feds. Everybody just knows that they look like federal agents, right? Those are the remarks for this hour. We'll do it again in the final hour. Brought to you, powered by Morris Family Farms and Organic Meats. Darkness next.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite idiom that you say that you're not exactly sure where it came from? Or
I can't put my tongue on one at the moment, but yeah, there are many that, and then some are being, the history's being rewritten. Yeah, now they're racist now, yeah. Or whatever.
So we're going to talk to them. I like the English language is weird. You know, we pronounce words that one way when they should be pronounced. If two words that are spelled almost exactly the same are pronounced two different ways, yes. It's weird. We're going to talk about where some sayings came from. And
all right.
A lot of them were not racism. As much as you want to be.
We'll do that next. Hang on. It's the Shannon Burke Show. Well, as soon as we're given a deadline in Colombia, and they've been told they are not allowed to assemble at UT Austin, they're being arrested in both places now. They've decided to just say, no, we're just going to. At UCLA, they're. Protesters are not allowing Jewish students to enter the school. Let me see if...
You guys have closed the entrance. We are UCLA students. I have my ID right here. I'm being blocked off, not by the security guard, but by you two. You three. Oh, look, they're making their burger while I'm going this way. Excuse me. This is what they do. Everybody, look at this. Look at this.
He's wearing a Star of David around his neck, and they see that, and they're not going to let him... Jews aren't allowed anymore. What on earth? In Columbia, faculty are linking their arms that lead into the encampment so people can't leave the encampment and the cops can't go in to get them. We tell you, in Texas, it looks like a couple of these people are resisting quite a bit. Unbelievable. Wow, that's a... And what will they be charged with? Anything of meaning, you know?
Oh, no. Over the weekend, they were talking, the papers were running about how these students want amnesty. They want, that's part of their demands, is they get amnesty from any possible charges, or also their names being linked to the protest in any way.
Well, that's why a lot of them wearing masks. Yeah. They don't, you know, these one at one point, these idiots are going to have to get a job in the workforce.
And, you know, you're going to Columbia Law. There's a lot of law firms that have a certain last name that probably wouldn't want you on their law firm anymore.
I've never seen anything. I mean, it's at multiple universities across the country. Wow. We'll be all right as long as we have our mamala. Kamala was on Drew Barrymore's show, and last week when Biden did Stern said he's the father, a good father and a father for our country. Well, now we have the mother.
I've been thinking that we really all need a tremendous hug in the world right now.
Yeah.
But in our country, we need you to be Mamala of the country.
Mamala. Mamala.
What is with Drew Barrymore? Also, all her interviews are uncomfortably close.
Yeah, she sits real close and wants to get all touchy.
Like, reaches out and holds your, like...
That's weird. I think maybe Kamala's edible kicked in before this piece of audio. Maybe she had a couple of martinis prior. But I can't for the life of me figure out what she is talking about here.
Everything is in context. My mother used to, she would give us a hard time sometimes, and she would say to us, I don't know what's wrong with you young people. You think you just fell out of a coconut tree? You exist in the context.
Coconut tree is not a thing.
Did you fall out of the coconut tree?
It... Of all in which you live and what came before you.
There we go.
She plays the hits.
Woo! Man, we've got a father and a mamala now. They should run with that.
The father and the mama love your country.
God. Let's get dark.
Let's do that.
It's Disturbing History with EZ. There's a lot of history out there. Some of it isn't in the books.
The English language.
Someone said that idiom I use is Jesus Palomino, but that's not a really a, it's, that's more, I don't like to, you know, take the Lord's name in vain. I just put Jesus Palomino in there.
Yeah, I don't know if that would counter under an idiom. Idioms are going to be like a random set of words that are put together that don't seem, that have a meaning, but don't seem to have the meaning of what they're portraying. Like when pigs fly.
Right, right. All right.
Those are type of things. We'll go over a couple other ones that fit under that, but... you know, any of the, I'm trying to think of some other ones that aren't on this list. A person who was born yesterday. Bury your head in the sand.
Oh, yeah.
A piece of cake, which I think now we've figured out that might be racist. Maybe. Oh, no, a cakewalk.
Cakewalk is, yeah.
Cakewalk is racist. Things like that. Those are more idioms. I don't know if you use a lot of them, but anybody who's been born in the South, Southwest, your grandparents have used some idioms.
All hat, no cattle.
Yeah, all those exactly like that. And a lot of people go, what does that mean? Where did that even come from?
Yeah.
And there's always, we're going to go through some of them, and I'm sure there'll be some people that argue because there's a lot of, English is weird. The way we've written it down, the way we've documented it, there could be multiple histories to a way a word or a phrase was portrayed.
Okay.
That's why we end up with, like, everybody's like, oh, that's definitely a racist term. And you're like, no, it out for a picnic was used long well before you want to try to turn it into a racist term. But we'll start with to turn a blind eye.
Turn a blind eye.
It's used to refer to the act of ignoring or failing to acknowledge something you know to be real.
Okay, yeah.
The expression finds roots in the naval exploits of one Admiral Horatio Nelson during the Battle of Copenhagen. In about 1801, in the midst of an intense battle, Nelson, commanding the British fleet, received a signal from his superior to withdraw from the engagement. Well, back then, naval signals were sent by flags or
symbols. Lights.
Yeah, lights, flags, things
SOS,
like that.
Things like that.
However, Nelson, renowned for his boldness and strategic acumen, allegedly raised his telescope to his blind eye, claiming he could not see the signal. So, by turning a blind eye to the order, defiantly continued the fight, ultimately securing a decisive victory for the British forces. This audacious act of disregarding orders by feigning ignorance gave rise to the expression of to turn a blind eye, signifying the deliberate choice to ignore or overlook something often out of convenience or just want to.
Huh.
Over time, the phrase has transcended its naval origins, become a widely used idiom in the English language, and now encompasses instances beyond military context, representing a deliberate act of ignoring or overlooking something.
Yeah, that's... I had no idea where that came from. Zero.
There you go. Horatio Nelson and his blind eye. Crocodile tears. Shed them.
What does that mean?
You know, shed a crocodile
tear? Yeah.
Fake crying. The phrase to shed crocodile tears means simply to show insincere emotion or feign sadness or grief. The saying originates from ancient lore surrounding crocodiles themselves. In various cultures, it was believed the crocodiles shed tears while devouring their prey, creating the illusion of remorse or sadness. This belief likely stemmed from observing the watery discharge that occurs when crocodiles open or close their jaws. So a bunch of people that were sitting on a waterbank, like, that crocodile's eating that water buffalo. And he looks sad about it.
They actually have something that excretes from their eyes?
It's more, I think it's a pressure thing. So when they open their jaws, it releases that. So it looks like, you know, you have water that drains down.
But we say it because...
Faint and sadness. The crocodile is pretending like they're saying...
He should be happy he's eating a bison.
Yeah, he's eating the bison, but he's, you know, look, he's pretending he's sad because he has to eat this bison. Over time, the phenomenon became associated with insincere displays of emotion or false sympathy. The term crocodile tears actually first appeared in English literature in the 16th century, reflecting this ancient notion and suggests that tears shed were not genuine, but rather a deceptive facade. The expression gained popularity in the English language as the metaphor for feigned sorrow, hypocrisy. It continues on basically that same way, a feigned sadness or grief or even, you know, caring. Feeling under the weather. You call your boss every once in a while and tell them that and you're feeling a little bit
under the weather.
Yep. It's used when someone feels unwell or in low spirits. The saying has its origins in maritime terminology as well. In the 19th century, sailors used the phrase under the weather bow to describe a ship's position when it was being battered by the rough seas and adverse weather conditions. So being under the weather meant enduring the discomfort and sickness often accompanied by such conditions. As time passed...
Seasickness?
Yeah, basically because the weather is over the bow, you know, under the weather bow. Basically, it's going to be definitely moving a lot faster, bouncing up and down. You're going to get wet. You're going to get sick. You're going to get seasickness, all those fun stuff from, you know, bad being...
I didn't know where that came from.
A ship in bad weather. As time passed, the nautical expression found its way into common usage as a metaphor for feeling unwell. The association between rough seas and feeling unwell likely resonated with people, leading to widespread adoption of the phrase in everyday language. It is still commonly used. It suggests a temporary state of not being quite oneself or often characterized by symptoms such as fatigue, malaise, or minor ailments like a cold or headache. When experiencing a mild illness or simply feeling off kilter, saying that one is under the weather provides a convenient way to express discomfort. This is where we talk about phrases having multiple origins.
Yeah.
Let the cat out of the bag.
Let the cat out of the bag. I don't know where that came from.
Multiple origins I've seen. A lot of times, the one that you'll hear the most often is, again, nautical terms in the terms of a punishment. And the fact that the person dealing the punishment on the ship would be have a sack that he stores his cat of nine tails out. And if you are going to... punish a person, you are letting the cat out of the bag. You're pulling a cat of nine tails out.
Now it's like you let a secret out.
Yes, and that's where the other one will come
from.
The expression "let the cat out of the bag" refers to actively revealing a secret or deliberately, or either deliberately or inadvertently. The phrase has two commonly suggested origins. One of the theories refers to the cat of nine tails, a whipping device infamously used by the Royal Navy as an instrument of punishment aboard its ships. The whip's knotted nine cords are capable of scratching the back of a sailor badly, hence the nickname. The wounds created by the whip are like what occurs when a cat scratches a human back. A lot worse. It's a very, very
painful act. Oh, my God. You've seen The Passion of the Christ?
Oh, yeah. The second theory of the origin of the phrase, which we believe is probably most probable, is the ridiculous livestock fraud that is commonplace at the time in Europe. So, merchants would sell customers live piglets in a bag. It's easy to transport live piglets in a bag. So, you go to your stand... You go to your local piglet merchant, and he's got, like, bags hanging of, you know.
They're in a bag?
Yeah, well, like I said, it's easy to transport piglets in a bag. Sometimes, though, fraudulent merchants would swap the bag for would swap the pig for a cat while the customer is distracted. So you send your, lovely maiden over there, tell her she's got that corset on, a little busty, and she's talking to you. You turn your back, he pulls that pig out, throws a cat in there, sits the bag. The buyer would not discover that they had cheated until they got home and literally let the cat out of the bag.
Wow.
Over the centuries, it has become a widely used idiom in the English language. The image of a cat escaping from its bag remains a vivid metaphor for the unintended disclosure of a secret, emphasizing the difficulty of containing information once it has been set free. Huh. Now, I know you've heard the term like a bull in a china shop.
Yes, that's exactly... I mean, it sounds like I know where it came from. I mean, I don't think a bull actually ran through it. Maybe it did.
Surprisingly, yes.
Did it really?
That's exactly where it came from. When someone behaves like a bull in a china shop, the person behaves recklessly and is clumsy in a situation when such a behavior would cause damage. This phrase originated from a real-life situation when cattle were brought into market in London for the sale in the 17th century. Sometimes cattle would stray into nearby China shops, causing havoc in the process. The phrase first appeared in print in the early 19th century and quickly became a popular metaphor for describing someone who behaves with reckless abandon or lacks finesse in delicate situations.
They ran bull by...
Well, they ran bulls into town to go to market.
And there's some China shops there.
They had some China shops, and apparently some people forgot to lock up their doors for the day, and the old bulls got in the China shop, and...
That's awesome.
The association of the powerful lumbering bull causing havoc in a setting filled with fragile items vividly captured the idea of someone being clumsy, destructive, or unrefined, at which now the expression is now firmly embedded in the English language. How about to beat around the bush?
I'd like to know where beat around the bush came from. AC/DC's song?
And it's not where you dirty monsters think your mind is going to. The phrase beat around the bush means to discuss a matter in a dodgy way without coming to the point. The saying has its origins. KJP beats around the bush a lot.
Oh, yeah.
I'll just leave that one for a pause for a second and then continue on. The saying has the origins of medieval hunting practices. In those times, hunters would literally beat bushes with sticks to flush out birds and other game hiding within. However, sometimes the game would be difficult to flush out, and hunters would resort to beating around the bush instead of directly targeting the concealed prey.
Oh.
This indirect approach prolonged the hunt and was seen as inefficient. You better to beat the bush than beat around the bush.
No kidding.
Over time, the phrase beat around the bush evolved into a metaphor for avoiding directness or skirting around the main point of conversation or action.
They actually beat around a bush.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes you want to hear something straight from the horse's mouth.
Yes, where did that come from? It had to come from, what?
Mr. Ed, that's how they got him to talk.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Shoved some peanut butter in his mouth.
But I thought it had something to do with... looking in the horse's mouth and knowing, like, you're going to buy a horse and you got the information straight from the horse's mouth.
Kind of. More, you got to think in the world of Saturday, May 4th, Kentucky Derby.
Right.
What is going to go happening for every single race in there is going to be people betting. And right. If you wanted to get the best bet, you would want to get straight from the horse's mouth or... the people that are around the horse at all times. The expression straight from the horse's mouth means that a person has received information from someone who has personal knowledge of the spoken matter. The saying originates from the world of horse racing and betting. In this context, receiving information straight from the horse's mouth means obtaining it directly from a knowledgeable and reliable source, often the horse's trainer, owner, or someone closely associated with the horse himself. Phrase gained popularity because obtaining information directly from those intimately involved with a horse provided bettors with the most accurate and reliable insights into its condition, performance, and chances of winning. Get your information straight
from the horse's mouth.
Now, to put someone on the spot.
Oh, yeah. Let me guess. To put someone on the spot on a stage where they should stand and talk.
Almost perfect.
And that was just a guess.
And that's, but you're putting them in the incorrect spot. So, you know, you did theater stuff, so you have stage markings where, you know, they're supposed to hit their mark. They're going to, which also where that phrase comes from, to hit the mark, also comes from stage work. You know, you have spots on the stage where they know they need to stand, they need to do this, that works the same way. The phrase put someone on the spot means to cause someone embarrassment or difficulty by forcing them to answer a difficult question or make an important decision. The saying finds its origins in the world of theater. In theatrical productions, actors perform on stage where designated spots marked by lighting or other cues indicate where they should stand or perform specific actions during a scene. If an actor was unexpectedly placed in a spot where they were not prepared to deliver their lines or perform their line or before their role, they would be caught off guard and likely pressured to respond immediately or put on the spot. The situation of being thrust in the spotlight figuratively and without warning led to the expression to put someone on the spot, denoting a moment of unexpected pressure or scrutiny. To get cold feet.
That means you're nervous. You're right. You're nervous about something.
So any guess on where you might be getting cold feet?
Somewhere where your shoes are off. In bed?
Well, you're right kind of on the shoes area. The phrase to get cold feet means to suddenly become too frightened to do something you had planned to do, especially something important. There seems to be several possible theories about this origins, which changed as the expression evolved itself. A possible theory is from the military back in the 16th and 17th century, When soldiers went to war in harsh weather and technology available at that time did not allow for the manufacture of high-quality protective footwear. The feet of the soldier were often exposed to snow and other elements, which would cause them to freeze. In this state, the soldier could not fight a fight and could not be sent to the front. He has gotten cold feet. Another origin story has its roots in the world of the 19th century American slang, particularly in the context of gambling and politics. It was commonly used to describe a sudden loss of nerve or resolve, especially just before undertaking a risky or important endeavor. The phrase likely originated from the physical sensation of one's feet becoming cold due to nervousness or fear leading to reluctance to proceed with a planned action. In context of gambling, it referred to a player backing out of a bet at the last moment due to doubts about their chances of winning. And while in politics, it described a candidate withdrawing from a race due to apprehension about their ability to succeed. Several others involve Italian and German influences about a lack of money or a lack of courage. Although the first literary publication of the phrase as we know it today appeared in Stephen Crane's second edition publication of Maggie, Girl on the Streets in 1896. And then finally, burying the hatchet.
Burying the hatchet. It doesn't involve burying a hatchet in someone's head, does it?
No, but it does involve actually kind of burying a hatchet. The phrase bury the hatchet simply means to make peace and end conflict. The saying traces its origins back to Native American tradition. Specifically, the practice of certain tribes during treaty and negotiations or peace agreements, when the tribes would come together to settle disputes or establish peace, they would symbolize their commitment to reconciliation by literally burying a hatchet or a tomahawk in the ground. This act served as a tangible representation of their willingness to let go of past conflicts and grievances, signifying a mutual desire to move forward in harmony. So more like throw that sucker in the ground, like, all right, look, I don't have any weapon. We're done fighting. It's a, you know. Significance.
Was it a ceremony where they actually buried a hatchet?
Yeah, the burying of the hatchet was not only a symbolic gesture, but also a practical one, as it ensured that the weapon could not be readily retrieved for future conflicts. Although the phrase came popular in the 17th century, the practice of burying the hatchet is way earlier than that, possibly predating the European settlement of America. This practice has been observed in Massachusetts as early as 1680. In the Treaty of Hopewell, which marked a new era of relations between the United States and Native American nations, signed by Colonel Benjamin Hawkins, General Andrew Pickens, and Headman McIntosh in the Kiowee in South Carolina, in 1795, they all make use of the phrase. So
we're going to bury the hatchet.
Over time, burying the hatchet has evolved into a widely recognized idiom in the English language, representing the act of resolving differences or ending hostilities between individuals or groups. To bury the
hatchet. Where did piece of cake come from?
Let me see if I have that one. It is believed the phrase was invented in the 1870s during slavery. They're talking about the same cakewalk, yeah. So a piece of cake came from being a cakewalk type of thing. The piece of cake that was awarded as a prize to the best couple team can be known, so they're using it as that one.
But it's meant to express the ease of a task or something,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I actually saw something recently on the cakewalk thing. I think we talked about it. I did a little bit back research on it, and it was so the cakewalk was a dance that was done, and they say it was a lot of times it was done for entertainment for the plantation owners, and they would, you know, they would do it as a competition, and whoever did the best cakewalk would get a cake, and whoever danced the best would get a piece of cake, and that was a reward for the day. The piece of cake though came more from the fact that people love this dance. They found it amazing. But the dance itself is difficult to do.
Oh, it's a real.
But they made it look so easy that they made it look like a easiest cake or easiest pie. They made the dance the actual slaves or the people that imitated.
So
this is
a choreographed actual.
Yeah, it was a choreographed dance that they were doing. And they made it look so smooth that it looked like it was that's a piece of cake that they, boy, he
probably
he
just
say, so
these white guys got no rhythm. Let's show what dance is really like.
Oh, yeah.
All right. I'm trying to think if I use any. I use those all the time.
Once in a blue moon. Devil's advocate. I use devil's advocate all the time. Apple of the eye. Zip your lip. Burning the midline oil. Learn the ropes.
Learn the ropes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's got to be a nautical one, too, I'm assuming.
When we return, it's kind of a sad story, I guess. I don't know. The Ontario Human Rights Tribunal has concluded the National Service Dog did not discriminate when it removed one of the dogs from the home of a autistic, was a severely autistic child?
Yes.
They did. They gave this family a service dog. And then they went back to check on the service dog and said, you know what? We're taking this dog with us. I'll tell you why when we return. It's the Shannon Burke Show. This family got a service dog, Sammy. It was living there to help a child that had some serious disability. And they, you know, it was a, they don't say what exactly kind of dog it was, but it was a trained dog. These things are, you know. When they delivered the dog, it weighed 83 pounds, very healthy. But it got up to 129 pounds. 40-something pounds on a dog is a lot of weight. So they tried to get this family to properly feed the animal, to arrange some play dates, to get out and get some exercise, but year after year they walked with him, nothing ever happened. The dog is just absolutely fat, and it's not healthy for the dog. So they removed it. When it finally did lose weight, it developed the degenerative hip condition, you know, because it was heavy.
Yeah, it was 40 pounds overweight.
And they say, you know, there wasn't the disability of the person wasn't a factor. The factor was this dog was not cared for properly. They're unable to walk the dog. They couldn't exercise it consistently. They're unwilling to pay for a dog walker or accept other offers to attend play dates or have high school student walk the dog. And ultimately, the applicant's family withdrew from the accommodation process by ceasing communication with the National Service Dog people. And they took the dog people to court because they took the dog away. And they're like, yeah, you know.
Yeah, unfortunately, you had a dog that put 40 pounds on it. That's abuse.
Yes.
I mean, you have to really try hard to get a dog to put on that much weight. You're feeding it garbage at that point.
There could be a result of the kid with autism because you don't really understand stuff. And it makes the dog happy when you give it a treat. Yeah. You know, the dog will do things. It really likes you if you give it a treat. Maybe there's a bona fide reason why, I'm sure mom and dad weren't feeding the dog till it was fat if they knew it was an issue.
Maybe they were. Maybe they're the type of people that just tears open the bag of dog food and leaves it there on the floor for them to munch on as they want to.
This is a dreaded disease. It sounds hot, though. Sexsomnia. It's weird. You mainly masturbate in your sleep.
Yeah, you do sexual acts by being like sleep. It's sex sleepwalking.
One married woman in her mid-20s tears off all of her clothing and masturbates feverishly, but doesn't remember anything when her partner arouses her or tells her the next day. 31-year-old man masturbates while asleep. Sometimes, so feverishly, he injures his groin.
Boy, he is going at it hard.
Man. It's an unconscious behavior, and it's made him avoid relationships for 8 years because they catch him beating it at you know, 3 a.m. Then they're not acting out dreams either. The brain's not in a dream state at that time. So says Dr. Carlos Schenck, a psychiatrist at the Hennepin County Medical Center, University of Minnesota. He said these are disorders of arousal. They most often occur during the slowest, deepest stage of sleep called Delta. It's like an alarm trigger goes off, the central nervous system, and you go from your basement to your roof in no time flat. Your cognition is deeply asleep. You're not with a program, but your body is activated. It's dangerous because then you start walking and running and doing all sorts of things without your mind being awake. It's difficult to study because unless people injure themselves, they may have no idea about their unconscious sexual activity until a partner tells them about it. Hey, you masturbating all night last night? A 2010 study asked 1,000 randomly selected adults in Norway found 7% had experienced sexsomnia at least once during their lives, and 3% were currently living with the condition. There are some people that will engage in sexual activity with their partner, and it's not bothersome to either one of them. So it's possible that this could just be consensual for some. I'm not complaining.
No.
But it can ruin people's lives. One woman, according to one woman's husband, twice a month his wife would moan sexually and engage in dirty talk, words she'd never, ever use when she was awake. She'd fondle her husband during the night, and then they would engage in sex until she became conscious and accused her husband of forcing sex on her.
Yeah, that's the part that didn't get you in trouble.
She also masturbated while calling out other men's names, including that of a male co-worker, leading her husband to believe that she was cheating on him. The doctors warn you should not assume people with sexsomnia are allowing a secret to escape their subconscious.
Uh-huh, sure. She just happened to remember Barry's name from work.
Oh, Barry from the mailroom. They say, no, it's the sleeping brain is wired differently from the waking brain. You're not conscious when you're asleep. You can't reach any valid conclusion about so-called lying or telling the truth in your sleep. The woman refused to believe her husband's description of her behavior for years, finally seeking professional treatment in 2019 after her 9-year-old son heard her moaning sexually while asleep. She said, oh, that was the worst. That was terrible. And the patients have total amnesia about it. It's usually their partner or family members that tell them, you did this, you did that. And the patients, I don't know anything. And they're embarrassed and they're full of shame and they're apologetic and they're miserable. Sometimes people have been arrested. There could be some legal consequences from sexual behaviors, particularly with minors, and also with aggressive behaviors during sleep. There's a whole area of sleep forensics that deal with those issues. Some people that have either sleepwalking or talking as a child go on to develop sexsomnia. They don't know the ultimate cause. There's a genetic component if you have at least one first-degree family relative with some type of parasomnia, you're more likely to develop one. Sleep apnea can cause it. That'd be bad if you're like out of breath from masturbating so feverishly and then you couldn't breathe. There are treatments available. The medication for it has side effects and it can become habit forming.
Oh, I gotta take my meds or I'll have sexsomnia.
Man. There are a few other treatments out there. They can reduce symptoms dramatically, possibly eliminate the symptoms altogether. Others may have a partial improvement, but that's when the medication is necessary. What does it just make you completely asleep?
That must like completely shut the brain down.
Yeah. Or they say clinical hypnosis. And if you do have sexsomnia, reduce your caffeine and alcohol.
Well, I'm ready for the Super Bowl commercials.
Or just rub one out before you go to bed. Then maybe you won't be, likely. What a terrible, terrible gig. The loneliest man in the world. I feel bad.
This guy just seems sad.
Sweetwater, Texas. 70-year-old Al Gilberti. He's lonely. And I guess, you know, I don't know if it's 70s too old to go to a bar, maybe. You know, you got to be the 70-year-old, so you're probably not going to find.
They may not be his scene. He might not be a bar guy.
Well, he is taking to renting a billboard for $400 a week, seeking companionship, marriage, and he likes karaoke a lot. It says, lonely male can relocate Sweetwater, seeks female marriage-minded, enjoys karaoke.
Okay. What's his name again?
Al Gilberti.
Al, I've got something to tell you here. You must be god-awful at karaoke, because how you're not getting any karaoke tail with all those old ladies that go out to the karaoke night. If you're one of those guys that bring your own karaoke track, like you're going to do some Frank Sinatra every Friday night down the local karaoke bar, you're going to be able to walk out with some karaoke groupies.
Yeah. First of all, if you're renting a billboard, the people that see that, they learn two very important things. A, you've got some disposable cash. B, you're super desperate.
Super desperate.
His three non-negotiables: loyalty, honesty, and sincerity. And he would even move anywhere in the United States. He's even willing to move to the UK. He went there. He likes it there. So far. Oh, by the way, Al's a former band promoter. You know.
Come on, Al. What happened, man?
A band promoter. He's got more backstage tail than anybody. He got four hundred calls and about 50 emails in a couple of weeks. But Al doesn't want to answer the phone calls. He has all the calls redirected to his friend's phone.
It sounds like Al is messing with his friend.
It's been more inquiries from people that are looking to gain something from me, which I get. I'd probably do the same. People were inquiring, thinking I was someone rich to help with their bills. A lot of people calling saying that they need a sugar daddy. He said, I want to meet the right person, but I haven't had that person call me yet.
I did laugh because the billboard has all that information, his picture, and then it has a strip that has his phone number. It says, text this phone number, and then call this phone number. But above that, I don't know if it's maybe the billboard has to add it in there, or he was covering his own ass. He put, do not text and drive.
Oh, yeah, he probably has to put that there. He said that I just want someone loyal and honest, and they're going to be coming into something they really want to be in. He's a good listener. He's very open-minded, and he has a retirement income. He's in good shape, and he believes he doesn't look his age. He said a lot of people are closed-minded. I'm not. He was with somebody who was 26 years younger. He said that tells you something else, too. If that person younger than me, I don't really mind. Man, I mean, go hit on women at the I don't know where you go at 70. Nursing
hit the
hall?
Bingo hall?
Bingo halls, yes.
Yeah, you can get so much if you want to go down to the bingo hall. If you're the guy that shows up with multiple colors and the little stamper thingies, you're going to have ladies all over you.
He says, I think everybody's kind of lonely. If it's not someone that you're with on a steady basis, then you're by yourself. As for a first date, if it's somebody in Europe, I don't know if he's currently got any billboards in Europe. He would have to be on Zoom for a while. But if they want to come to the United States, that'd be great. He said, or I'll go to the UK. I'm prepared to move anywhere in the United States. It all depends on the person. As long as I'm not going to stump the money up and then I have to leave. What?
Like he's going to pay for a bunch of it and then
Yeah. Sweetwater, Texas. Damn.
Is there nothing going on in Sweetwater, Texas?
It's near Houston. I mean, anywhere you are. I mean, I saw the picture of the guy. He's not hideously ugly. He's in fairly good shape.
He's not, you know, Elephant Man or anything like that. Head on down to your local bowling alley.
Yes.
Go to the library. I don't know where some other places where old people are at.
Yeah, where do they go? Eye doctor. Yeah. Go hang out in the waiting room with the eye doctor or the urologist or something.
Yeah, hang out the heart doctor. Sweep them right off their feet.
Who's on hold?
You got David. Apparently, he's a sleepwalker.
David, how are you? Thanks for holding.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you?
Doing well. You sleepwalk?
I used to. When I was preteen,
yeah.
When I was from, I guess, the age of 10 to about maybe when I hit puberty, it was bad. Like, I would, one day I was telling the person who answered the call, one time I decided to get up. This was around, I don't know, 11. My mother and father used to watch Johnny Carson at night, so I decided I was going to get up and go play baseball. I'm in my underwear. I go grab my glove and ball and bat.
Wow.
My father says, where are you going? And I tell him that I'm going to go play baseball. I said, Jimmy and Kenny are waiting for me. Kenny's my brother. Jimmy was my best friend. And my father had to tell me that we couldn't go because it started raining. And, of course, I believed it.
Oh. And so, he didn't wake you up. They say you shouldn't wake people up.
No, you don't. You let them just. I used to get up and sit and watch the Johnny Carson show and watch the whole show, and I'd wake up in the morning. My parents said, did you remember watching Johnny Carson last night? I said, I didn't get up last night. They said, oh, yes, you did.
Wow.
You were sitting right on the couch watching TV.
Interesting.
And I did this a few times a week.
Yeah. Well, are you waking up and masturbating in the middle of the night now, or sleeping masturbating?
Can't say that I have, but I don't remember if I did.
I appreciate the call. Thank you very much. Who's that?
Robert.
Let's talk to Robert. Robert, thanks for the call. Go ahead.
Shed, how you doing, guys?
Good.
Cool. In reference to the protesters out there in hippie land, I got an idea. Just round them all up, handcuff them, ankle cuff them, put them in a giant net, have a crane come in,
okay.
Scoop them up, pick them up, put them in a dump truck, take him off away to jail.
All right. That sounds like a good one. Thank you very much. Yeah, that's where you scoop him up and you dump him and put him in a dump truck and take him to the jail.
I think he's on to an idea, though. Let's set up a crane with a claw machine on the end of it.
And let other people.
And go over the top. And
for a dollar.
For a dollar, you get to drop in as many protesters as you collect, you get to keep. You're like, oh, cool. I got a PhD in liberal arts.
Oh, my God. These kids are all going to end up with records, right? I mean, it's
no.
You think?
They'll sooner or later, the college will kind of, they'll back down. They'll say, all right, if you guys leave, we won't press any charges against you, and you won't have to have your name on anything.
Yeah,
because they're afraid right now, if they leave, they're immediately going to start, hey, mask off here, your picture, all right.
Right.
Cool.
They're all risking that. Yeah. Every one of them. Yeah. You can't take a mugshot with a mask on. Mm-hmm. It's not going to let you do that. I don't know about this. This is always a great story. But it's a 17-year-old kid now has a master's degree in computer science. He got his bachelor's from Pitt last year. He said, it's been a lot of hard work. I've had to defend a thesis. I'm very excited to be here today and celebrate. I'm proud. His professors say, we're very proud. He chose to do his bachelor's and master's and very proud of the work that he's developed so far. Now that he has his master's, he's not quite sure what he's going to do. His name is R.J. Krishnaswamy. Little Indian. Young Indian man.
Good job by him.
And by the way, this is the type of accomplishment that liberal educators don't want. They'd rather keep, because he's Indian, there's too many super smart Indians.
Yeah, he's not of the diversity that they want.
And this is the kind of accomplishment that they'd like to slow down altogether. So that, you know, people of color could catch up. 17 years old. Man, what a nerd. You know, what the hell? That's a serious nerd.
Do you think he's ever snuck some alcohol before?
No. No, I bet he, one time one of the guys in his dorm showed him a nudie picture and he kind of shied away from it and turned blushed.
They reached across, offered him a blunt, and he...
No, thanks. No, I've got to study tonight. Computer science. Is that a difficult...
Yeah, he's going to run Google one day.
Oh, yeah. With a name like Krishnaswamy?
Or an AI. So we'll have some AI that he's going to have built. And
speaking of that, have you heard about the new AI death calculator?
Is it calculating your own death? Or
yes.
Okay.
Well, I think. So everyone says, creators of this AI called Life2Vec, they say it's scarily accurate death calculator. And they're warning of a new threat to those curious about learning when they're going to die.
Wait, how do you quantify that it's a scarily accurate?
I don't know.
Has there already been some people that have died? They're like, I told you.
It would have to be, but it works by using ChatGPT technology to foretell when people will die based on select details of their life. Income, profession, where they live, their health history, did they smoke, do they drink alcohol? And here's a little sample of a few questions. It says, AI calculator. That's great to hear. Your next question, do you smoke or have you ever smoked? Again, no judgment, just trying to get an accurate prediction. Then you answer that. This person said never. Then it said, fantastic. On to the next question. How often do you consume alcohol? Once again, no judgment. The person answered once a month. And it said, thank you for your honest response. Now for the final question. On average, how many hours of sleep do you typically get per night? The person answered six. That was the last question. AI death calculator said, thank you for your response. Based on the information provided, death calculator predicts your expiration date is September 1st, 2082. But it's important to remember that this is a prediction, just a game and not to be taken seriously. Remember, it's always best to seek actual medical advice for concerns. They say we use the fact that in a certain sense, human lives share similarity with language, just like words. They follow each other's sentences and follow each other's in human lives. Most frighteningly, this digital prophet of doom can determine life expectancy correctly 78% of the time.
Okay, that's, again, it's asking three questions that are pretty medically researched questions where they're going, okay, if you actively smoke, you actively drink, and you only get this amount of time of sleep every night, you'll live an average of 30 to 40 more years from the time you're on. I want it to tell me, like, hey, we did the calculations off all the questions, and probably shouldn't drive home tonight.
Yeah, you're making a ride home tonight. So they're warning that there's a lot of copycats out there. Don't use them. They're just trying to harvest your data. They say their AI model can predict almost anything using the technical, using the complex system at the Tech University of Denmark. We predicted death because it's something people have worked for many years to do, like insurance companies. So we have a good sense of what was possible. Can you imagine? That's priceless information for an insurance company. To test it, they examined a heterogeneous subject population of 6 million Danish people that varied in sex age between 2008 and 2020. They determined which subjects would likely live at least 4 years beyond January 1st, 2016, by feeding the AI information that it needed. Sample data included September 2012, San Francisco received 20,000 Danish kroner as a guard at a castle, Elsinore, during her third year in secondary boarding school. Hermine followed five elective classes. Each piece of data was assigned hyper-specific digital tokens. A forearm fracture was presented as S52 postpartum hemorrhage to calculate their approximate date of death. Using this, they were able to divine who had bit it by 2020 more than three quarters of the time. They say forecasting somebody's date is not a roll of the dice. I'd like to give it a shot. But they won't let you use it.
No.
They said it would be irresponsible.
This sounds like a bunch of hooey from a company that's trying to get you. There's no way to accurately predict that. Mainly because there's no way to accurately predict the world. When you're talking about someone's death, Yeah, okay. You can accurately predict maybe in a general time frame that if someone smokes, they drink, they eat a lot of fatty foods, they're 200 pounds obese, they're all these things. And yeah, they're going to have a shorter lifespan. But there's no way
to the date.
There's no way to the date that, because you don't know if that fat person walks out and they step on electrical wire and fry themselves. Has nothing to do with it.
But if everything goes as normal and you just live your normal life, then, you know, September 1st, 2082
that's all hooey. There's no way.
Okay. When we return, our buddy Eric Matheny will join us from the Bob and Eric Save America podcast. And the Riverside County Sheriff's Department doesn't have a very good background search for their new deputies. I'll tell you who they let slip by. Stick around. It's the Shannon Burke Show. Buddy, Eric Matheny, who's usually right on time. A deputy working for the Riverside County Sheriff's Department who was caught with 100 pounds of fentanyl pills. Remember that? He was nabbed as a part of a high-profile investigation into a cartel once led by El Chapo. He was reassigned his position as a correctional deputy after his arrest. He was driving a private vehicle in a Cali Mesa, pulled over. This guy was an operative for the cartel.
Probably should have worked on the background checks on that one.
Yeah, they don't detail how they got the information about his involvement in the operation, but it's apparent that he was the corrupt Riverside County correctional officer mentioned in a press release. Operation Hotline Bling. I don't know what that...
It's a Drake song?
Is it?
I think so.
It led to 15 arrests and a seizure of $16 million in narcotics. The Sinaloa cartel's activity in California.
Yeah, it is a Drake song. Look at that.
Huh. Yeah, that would be something you think that would be keen to ferret out.
Yeah,
guys,
have you
past?
Ever had any interaction with the Sinaloa cartel, or have you ever talked to El Chapo before, or any of those fun things?
Well, he is a sheriff's deputy, but he worked in correction as well. So I guess, you know, he's talking to people in the jail, in the prison system there, and finding out how he can get his drugs moved in and out. All right. Oh, we have a. I hope Eric can hear this. Go ahead.
From the Bob and Eric Save America podcast and his other job practicing law. Order! Order! It's Eric Matheny.
Ladies and gentlemen, Eric Matheny, we check in with him on Monday. Hey, how are you, Eric?
Did I just get my own intro?
You've got your own intro, big voice guy intro.
Man, I'm flattered. Thank you so much.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing fairly well. This is like a chaotic situation, and you know, pick a college campus from coast to coast, from UCLA to Columbia and all points in between, UT Austin. Columbia announced that they have, you know, their negotiations are over. They're not going to divest. They decided to wait out past their deadline to leave. They've got people, cops are in, you know, many campuses right now arresting people. How does this end?
Well, I think that before we look at how it ends, we have to look at how it begins. I mean, this is a generation that they can't decide if they're male or female. They get triggered very easily, and the work ethic certainly is lacking. So the fact that these people put this together organically, I think, is dubious at best. There has to be something in place. I'm getting feeling kind of like I had in 2020 when all the riots were going on. These weren't just springing up organically. Something was bigger, some higher purpose was putting this into place. And I think that's the thing. It springs up at Columbia, and now you have these organized protests everywhere with signs and shirts and matching scarves and you name it.
Right.
The thing is, you know, Greg Abbott put out a post the other day saying, you know, we will not tolerate anti-Semitism. And I have to take issue with that. And I'm Jewish. There's nothing wrong illegal. There's something morally wrong, but there's nothing wrong in terms of your constitutional free speech with being anti-Semitic. If you want to go out on your quad at school and say whatever you want to say, you're free to do it. Where the problem lies when your right to be free in your speech infringes upon the rights of other students. There are students that want to access their classrooms. There are students that want to walk to class without being harassed. Professors that want to make it to their class. There are students that want to go to graduation. So when you have these students that are organized by who knows how, and they're putting together these protests that are infringing upon the rights of other students and are creating a dangerous situation, that's where you have a problem. Occupying restricted areas, blocking access to buildings. So that's the problem. It's not what they're saying. And I don't think, I mean, what they're saying is disgusting, but we live in America and you can say disgusting things. And we as free speech absolutists have to be willing to tolerate that. It's when you infringe upon the rights of other students who are there to get an education and to be free in their travels along campus. And a lot of them can't go. And here's another thing I was talking about on my podcast on Saturday. A lot of these kids, 4 years ago was COVID. So if these kids were freshmen 4 years ago coming into COVID and virtual school, now these same kids, they can't even go to graduation or even at Columbia, that they're now virtual. The experience that these young people are having, I mean, college was such a formative time for me and for so many. I feel terrible that they're being deprived of this, but nevertheless, how it ends, I don't know. But my big fear is I fear a Kent State. I fear something happening where, God forbid, a student is injured or killed. And I think that's the spark that's going to blow up the whole powder keg. I think we're coming into the summer. The election's 109 days away. I just have those George Floyd vibes. I'm feeling them pretty strongly. And that's the last thing we need right now is, God forbid, some student gets killed.
Yeah.
Something happens in a skirmish with law enforcement, and you're going to have riots like you've never seen.
Do you believe there's like a kingpin force here at work that's maybe funding? I mean, you see all these kids at Columbia show up with all brand new tents that look exactly the same. Same thing at other places. Is there a larger entity at work here, or?
I don't know. I sincerely doubt that Bass Pro Shops is sponsoring it, sending them free tents. But I mean, this does not spring up organically. It's just, it doesn't in this manner and method and with the speed and the coordination. These are organizations, that's the thing, the difference between Democrats and Republicans is we look at Republicans, we look at congressmen, senators, we look at what they're doing officially and in their offices. The Democrats run a completely different operation. They use these little organizations. They use the little action committees.
Right.
And they go out and they do these things. Soros, Clinton Foundation, all these globalist initiatives, they are connected to these little fringe groups, and they're the ones funding it. They're the ones kind of putting the talking points into place. So if you follow the money, if you follow it all the way back to the top, I'm confident it comes from a Soros or Soros-affiliated organization. But the idea here is to create that dissension, create that tension in the environment, and continue to sow division in this country, which we've seen for so many years. I mean, this goes back all the way to 2013, 2014, with riots in Ferguson, riots in Baltimore, COVID issues, riots for BLM. There's always these organizations in place. I mean, you can see little protests springing up here and there organically on campuses, but this level of organization and coordination, believe me, it's not being done by 19 and 20 year old kids who can't decide whether they're a boy or a girl. These are organizations that are very well funded and very sophisticated and know exactly how to create social unrest. We conservatives have no idea how to do that.
The level of involvement that we're seeing now from professors and people associated with it working at these schools is also quite alarming, because once you calm down the kids and they are all out of their tents and back in their dorms, you still have a hostile group of educators that continue to fuel their mushy little minds.
Well, that's the thing, too. I mean, understand that liberalism, conservatism is just like, think of conservatism like a train. It's just like it goes in one direction. It's one being. Liberalism is like, it's a multi-tentacle beast. They've got an arm in big tech. They've got an arm in academia. They've got an arm in entertainment, in corporate America, big pharma. They're everywhere. And, this is, we always joke about, liberal professors, they've been infiltrating academia for the last 50, 60 years. So, for the 19-year-old who's there who goes like, from the river to the sea, not understanding what it means, their 50, 60-year-old, professor emeritus, who's been there since 1978, is a hardcore dyed-in-the-wool socialist who has been there indoctrinating the young minds. Fortunately, I think for the most part, up until a point, we were fairly resilient to that. I graduated college in 2004. I had very left-leaning, almost socialist professors, and you kind of were resilient to it. Like, okay, you know, the professor's full of it, pass the test, move on. But there's something about this generation, I think, you know, possibly the way they have been indoctrinated, not just in school, but remember, when they're coming into the university, they've already been indoctrinated through public school, through right. education, through entertainment, through everything around them, through their peer groups, through their cultural influences, musicians, actors, people that they look to. They've been inundated with this stuff since day one. So they come in and a professor, all they're doing now is just reinforcing what they already believe. So that's why I think you're seeing young people come out of college the way they are, whereas previous generations, we were exposed to it too, but I think the rest of culture hadn't declined so much that we were yeah. being bombarded with it on all ends. It's like if one liberal professor says, you know, I'm a Marxist, you go, okay, great, ace the test, move on, and you retain your beliefs. We don't have that with this generation.
Yeah, you mentioned the kids that aren't being allowed to have their college. You know, they're not being, they're Jewish kids at UCLA. They won't allow in the building. They're starting to affect other kids, which means they're kind of psychopaths in that sense. They really have no care for anyone else's rights there. I was going to tell you. Oh, the banana issues. You see the banana incident on the UCLA campus.
I saw when some kid had a banana allergy and someone came the next day with bananas.
The protesters said that they were wielding them like rifles, like settlers aiming rifles at us.
This is the wussiest protest I've ever seen. Come on,
well,
bananas.
Well, now you're getting people that are getting maced or pepper sprayed and arrested, and they're resisting arrest. So do you imagine these schools will grow a heart later when the kids calm down and refuse to press charges, or some of these little kids going to try to apply for jobs with a record?
You know, that's the million-dollar question. Do they hold firm to, you know, their student code of conduct? And look, the fact remains is that this is not a free speech issue. And I'm sick and tired of people on the left going, oh, the right's anti-free speech. Nobody's anti-free speech. It's the manner and method in which you do it. So if you want to have your little area and you want to stand there and you want to chant whatever you want to chant, I don't care what it is, as long as you're not infringing on the other students who don't espouse the same beliefs as you, who don't subscribe to the same ideology, who just want to go to class, who just want to walk across campus without being harassed, Jewish students that want to wear their yarmulkes or wear whatever cultural garments they want to without fear or without being harassed or threatened physically. Yep. That's where you draw the line. And the universities, I mean, I got to take my hat off to them. That some of them are really saying, like, you can't function this way. You can protest, but this is not a campground. You can't live here. You can't operate this way. And hopefully there's a peaceful resolution. But I just feel bad for the students that want nothing to do with it. They're having these milestones stripped of their lives over stuff like this. I mean, these are people, like, if you want to get people on your side, it's kind of like the climate protesters that block a highway. Well, you know, if I miss my job interview or I can't pick up my kid, that's not going to get me over to your side.
Yeah.
Like, make a persuasive argument, educate others to put a tent in front of a building and say, well, you can't go to class anymore because I'm going to live here because this is what I believe. You're not winning anyone over. But again, and a lot of people have said this, and I think that's true, it's not about the message, because if you watch those man on the street interviewing the kids at college, they have no idea what they're protesting.
Right.
They just want to be a part of something so they can take the selfie, they can get the likes, they can get the subscribers on their YouTube, they can put it on TikTok. It's all about me. It's not about the cause. The cause could be anything. The cause is secondary to the dopamine and the affirmation that they get, because this generation is absolutely addicted to validation. Validate your feelings. Validate what I put online, validate me, validate my identity. It's just this vicious cycle of self-indulgence, and this is just another vehicle for it.
Let's change gears a bit. Has Kristi Noem solidified the fact that she'll never be vice president?
Well, here's the thing, and I've been saying this for a couple of years before the dog thing even came out, which, if true, and I mean, if she admitted to it, I haven't read her book, if she admitted doing that, it's repulsive, but beyond that, and I think that by itself is disqualifying, I don't see the point in putting her on the ticket, and I'll tell you why. One, you know, very famously a couple of years ago,
she completely, you know, bent the knee to the NCAA with the, you know, transgender sports ban in her state. Second of all, we can't discount the fact that a presidential election ticket has some political capital there. You put someone on the ticket for electoral gain, not necessarily because they're going to be a great vice president, and they may well be, but you have to consider, what demographic am I pulling over with this person? Mike Pence, for instance, I fully understand why Trump put him on the ticket in 2016. Trump was the political novice. He shoots from the hip. He speaks, you know, uncouthly. And you have Mike Pence, who is like this stately, grandfatherly, elder statesman who's going to bring over the Midwesterners and evangelicals, and anyone who might look at Trump and go, who's this loudmouth New Yorker? I get it. He balanced the ticket. I get why Barack Obama put Joe Biden on the ticket. Again, the elder statesman, the one who can, you know, bring over the centrist Democrats, and, you know, who's this young guy who we don't know anything about. Bringing Kristi Noem onto the ticket doesn't – there's no net gain for Trump. One, he's going to win South Dakota regardless of who he puts on. That is a deep red state. He's going to get it. Second of all, there's only 500,000 people that live there. So there's no electoral boon for him putting her on the ticket. He needs to put someone on the ticket who's going to bring voters over to him. And I think she just doesn't bring enough to the table. That, you know, if the dog thing is true, that's disgusting. And if conservatives love their dogs. But that being said, she just doesn't add enough to the ticket. I, you know, as far as her leadership style, you know, notwithstanding, you know, her personal life, I suppose, she's done a fine job in South Dakota. I go to South Dakota regularly. I love that state. But she's not the right pick. And also, given the fact of Trump's age, you have to consider that there's a probability, I suppose you could say, that this person may have to finish out the term. We've never elected somebody, you know, that age. I mean, granted, it's going to be, you know, Biden's going to be, what, 82 or something like that. And God forbid if he wins, I mean, he's going to serve place 86. This job is stressful enough. I mean, you have to consider, like, this vice president, and not only could take over the term if, God forbid, something happened to Trump, but is probably going to be the heir apparent moving forward in 28.
Right.
So I heard that Trump and DeSantis sat down.
Right. I was just about to ask you that.
Shannon, I would be the loudest cheerleader in the room for that ticket, because I've always liked both guys. And I always thought DeSantis would make a great president. And I always wanted to see him as president. I just didn't want to see any infighting. You know, if Trump decided to sit this one out, I would have been all in for DeSantis. I never wanted to see the two of them go head to head. And understanding the base the way I do, and certainly both men have great qualities, and there's some things about DeSantis that I think he does better than Trump. But to see them go head to head and to know Trump's base the way I do, to look at DeSantis, I don't care how smart or capable you are, you're going to do more harm than good by running against him. Bringing them together, first of all, DeSantis can bring over his voters, which he's got, you know, not as much as Trump, of course, but he's got a very loyal base as well.
Right.
And he's also a very capable guy, and I'd love to see him in 28. I think if you have Trump, DeSantis, you know, DeSantis is a VP, and granted a VP is kind of a constitutional eunuch, so to speak.
Right.
It puts him in prime position for 2028, where I think he can just assume the mantra, and go forward with the America First movement. I think he's the next generation of it. And I really do hope they bury the hatchet. You know, Trump, you know, he'll talk trash and he'll, you know, bury you if you go after him. But he's also very forgiving. I mean, think about how many guys that went after him in primaries and now they're the best of friends. So,
right.
If he sees a way forward, he's going to put it all behind him, say, oh, you know, Ron DeSantis is a smart guy. I'm not going to call him the sanctimonious anymore. But put the guy on the ticket. And I think he wins. I think hands down, he wins the people with chances on the ticket.
Trump has opened up a nice lead in battleground states. And as the Gallup poll comes out in Biden's 39th month in presidency, he's the worst president in 70 years since they've been doing this poll. So as we get closer and closer to this election, the media wants us all to think that Trump's so broke and has no money that he went to go to DeSantis to try to tap into some of his donors. How much of that do you think is true?
That didn't even cross my mind. I don't think that's true at all. I think Trump recognizes DeSantis is talented. I think he recognizes that he's a capable leader who has delivered results for the state of Florida and is popular. And I think he realizes that the two of them together are unstoppable. I mean, they're both two you know, remarkable figures under the same ideological umbrella. And we don't need them to be at odds with each other. Yeah, they both have huge egos, but who doesn't at that level of the game? That's the thing. I mean, to think that you can be the president of the United States, you got to have cojones, you know, the size of watermelon. You got to think that I can do this job. So, yeah, they're both egotistical men, and I respect that, but they're both talented. They both complement each other, you know, in other ways. DeSantis, you know, he's the introvert. He's the doer. He's the guy who gets it done. Trump's the loudmouth, braggart, alpha male.
Right.
And you can't have everybody in the world like Trump, because nothing would get done, because everybody thinks that, you know, they're the best. And you can't have everybody in the world like DeSantis, because there's no charisma and there's no inspiration. So you got to have the quiet, nerdy guys that get it done. And Trump being the leader, and the hallmark of any great leader is you surround yourself with the best and the brightest. And Trump's the leader, and surround yourself with guys like DeSantis. If DeSantis is a VP, he's going to be a very effective VP. He's going to be a very involved VP.
Yeah.
And he's going to spearhead a lot of these projects that Trump wants to do. And Trump's got, he's the dreamer. He's the big idea kind of guy, but DeSantis is the doer, and he can take these ideas and put them into action. I think it's an excellent combination. I really would love to see him on the ticket.
Wow. Do you have any idea about when Trump will announce? That could only strengthen and open up his lead even greater.
He's going to wait for the right time. You know, anticipation is key. You know, Trump is a showman first and foremost, so he's going to let people talk. He's going to let people like us, you know, talk on radio and podcasts and hypothesize what's going to happen. And, you know, he'll drop the hammer in a very grand way, I'm sure, at a big rally, and he'll introduce him. A fanfare, I mean, that's Trump's bread and butter. He'll deliver it. He'll deliver it when the time is right.
I want to end with this. Hunter sent he went out and hired celebrity entertainment attorney Mark Garagos and sent Fox News a heavily worded letter about the manner in which they're using his personal photographs, intimate photographs, and that they're his property, and they intend to sue. What do you think becomes of that? Is it just for attention?
I think it's just to cover his butt. He's a public figure. A lot of these pictures are just out in the public domain. And, you know, when you're out in the world and, you know, these pictures get taken or these pictures are published, you know, kind of becomes public record. So, you know, he can do that all he wants, but I don't know if he has a legal leg to stand on. He's a huge liability for his father.
Yeah.
I don't know why he does these things and, like, gets a high-profile lawyer and puts it out at the forefront. He'd be better just, you know, keeping quiet. But Biden's in big trouble. You know, he's in big trouble, and, you know, by no means is this, you know, rest on your laurels and be overly confident. But it's also at the same time a little terrifying, because when he's 9 points behind, what are they going to pull out at this point?
Right.
You know, what are they going to do? What's the next COVID? What's the next BLM summer of love? You know, there's always a plan. So, you know, keep your guard up.
And it looks as though Jack Smith's on ice until with the Supreme Court decision and throwing it back to an appellate, that case is on ice till well after November. And it's just Georgia and the criminal case he's currently involved in that they'll, you know, and that's it.
Like, correct. And if the Supreme Court doesn't shut it down with presidential immunity, if Trump wins, the federal prosecutions go away.
Yeah.
That's it. That's his DOJ. He'll pardon himself, whatever he has to do. That's it. He'll get rid of Ray. He'll fire Jack Smith. He'll get a new AG in there, and those cases will go away.
All right. Eric Matheny, catch the Bob and Eric Save America podcast wherever you get your podcast, and give Eric a follow on X. He's a great follow, at Eric M. Matheny. Good to talk to you, man. Have a great week, and we'll chat next Monday.
You got it. Thank you.
Thank you, buddy. So, I've got to get him an outro, too. All right. When we return, we'll get to remarks. Also, a Louisiana man has been sentenced to 50 years in prison and physical castration. He raped a teen. Physical castration. That means snip, snip, right?
Yeah, taking it off.
But there's a loophole. He may get to save his nads after all. Hang on, it's the Shannon Burke Show. Louisiana man sentenced to 50 years in prison and physical castration. He pled guilty to raping a teenager. A 2008 law, Louisiana law, says a convicted Men convicted of a certain rape offenses may be sentenced to chemical castration. They can also elect to be physically castrated. This guy said Sullivan's plea requires he be physically castrated. The process will be carried out by the state's Department of Corrections, according to the law, but cannot be conducted more than 1 week before the prison sentence ends. So, 54. So he's got a 50-year sentence. So he keeps his balls, unless he lives to be older than 104.
Or I bet you that's the guy that's definitely, every time they send him down to parole, he's going to be like, nah, guys, I'm good.
Oh, because really, if like he was paroled, he'd have to get castrated right away. Yep. Oh, youch. Man. So you have no nards, and you produce no testosterone, and you just have no drive.
Yeah, that's the theory behind it all. Also, he'll be a little octave higher maybe, too.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he does not want parole at all, does he? He better do a couple of bad things while he's there to put something in his record, you know? So it looks like he's a...
Not that I care either way. The guy's a monster that raped a kid, so he loses his balls, he loses his balls.
Yeah, you should parole him after 5 years.
Yeah, after 5 days.
Off to the surgery for you, buddy. You've been paroled.
Whoa, what? I don't know what happened. You want a parole. It was pretty fast. Never happens.
Put this gown on. Put your feet up in these stirrups. I guess they do it just like you do a dog.
Yeah, that or they do like with a bull. Don't they just like wrap around a rope? And
my buddy had one removed because he had a testicular cancer, and they did it like through his navel.
They just... like
they go down in there,
hook and just pull
them
it all up.
Pull them out, snip, snip, sew it up. Ugh. Yow. I wonder if it hurts.
I'm sure he's probably going to need a bag of peas for a couple days.
Oh, God. He can still get an erection, though, couldn't you?
I don't think so. Well, I don't know. Maybe.
Anyway, let's get to these remarks.
All right.
From the Florida Man Radio app and powered by Morganic Meats, it's time for your remarks. Just don't be stupid.
Don't be stupid. Also, a great way to catch up on archives of the program, and this show and Don's show as well. Hit the little button at the bottom. Here we go.
How about some self-washing sidewalks for that California coin?
That would be a pretty good idea, wouldn't it? Just wash all the Duke right into the gutter.
Me and my wife saw Civil War at the movies yesterday. Really intense movie, really good. You cannot help but think that we're about half of the way there. Go check it out.
I wanted to see it this week, and I just had too much going on.
So that 13-year-old, that woman let her into her house, and her fingerprints are all over it. So she's got an alibi because she's been let into the home. Ooh. When she goes back to rob it. And that dude, Freddie, sounds like a control freak trying to steer all those relationships. That woman should bail. And young Sheldon isn't bad. I think to me it was an effort to try and make fun of Southern culture. And if that's the case, they missed the mark, because I actually think it ends up endearing it even more. It's not that bad. Beat a beat-a.
Yeah, also, if that 13-year-old kid's a vampire, you let her in the house as well, so you cannot tell me about that.
I never thought of that, though. She would have an alibi. Because her finger, she's been in there voluntarily.
That's what happens when you have a 13-year-old kid just wandering around touching all the stuff in your house.
It was exactly like that.
Cakewalk is only offensive if you say chocolate cakewalk.
All right, buddy. Oh, boy.
Was gonna get his laptop fixed, but Hunter got high.
That's the,
He wasn't gonna show up and dick. Was gonna get...
It just says D-Picks in it.
Yeah.
It's a great song, though.
Beat around the bush. Is it a way of talking around a sensitive topic of conversation? Or is it B, a message that can kill crabs?
I get it, yeah. Method to kill crabs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do like the joke he's back in the game, but he certainly wasn't honing his skills while he wasn't calling us.
Shannon, I think the phrase you were referring to was looking a gift horse in the mouth. And back in the old days, when somebody would just gift you a horse or give it to you, first thing your ungrateful ass would do is check the teeth to see if they're a good horse, you know? Not even be thankful to them, but that's the first thing you do. And that was viewed as ungrateful. Anyway, be-do-be-do.
Right. Maybe I was conflating the two. I don't know. A lot of horse
idioms. A lot of horse idioms. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's the South.
Yeah.
Being around horses, you make horse things.
How about, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Easy. Tell us what it means. We'll do some research and tell us later. Bye.
Did someone actually throw the baby out with the bathwater once?
I'd have to look it up.
The same people complaining about putting an unruly farm animal down are the same ones that look away about third trimester abortions. Selective outrage. Selective outrage. It amazes me.
Yep. Mm-mm-mm.
Coming live from Highway 44, west of 75, by Inverness. You're scratching the airwaves. Need billboards. Need more listeners.
Okay. Jesus Christ.
Great name for that doctor, Dr. Shank. Vito Vito.
Shank. Oh my God, Sam's got three. You know, Sam, we can only... The limit's two, my friend.
Talking in our sleep has been one of the very best things known to man. To let the other half know when they're not happy at home, they will wander off and eat grass on the other side of a very large fence. Now, we get caught from time to time talking in our sleep. Well, dear God, it ain't like women ain't doing it. And they get caught in their sleep as well.
All right.
Throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Yeah.
Due to water not being available, family members usually bathe one tub at a time. One tub of water, and the father took a bath first. By the time the baby is bathed, the water is so dark and filthy that it may be possible to throw the baby out with the bathwater.
God, it's so gross. Thank God dad gets to go first.
Kay says she likes to touch spongy muffins. Been masturbating ever since.
Hey, Shannon, on the sex insomnia, I had an ex who had that where we were together for about a year, and it happened about two or three times, and he woke up in the middle of it. Of course, we finished, but he had told me a story once that when he was younger, they had a sleepover in his living room, and he woke up and started stripping, and someone had to wake him up, and he didn't understand why his underwear was off, so...
Oh. Did she have it or he had it?
I don't know if I have sexomnia, but my wife is usually asleep when I have sex. But if she ever wakes up and finds her sister there, she's going to be pissed.
Let's hope this AI death detector doesn't fall into the hands of the insurance companies. That would suck. Your rates would be going up. Or down. Probably up. Especially from Georgia.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot, when you go to get, like, life insurance, you had to answer a lot of questions. But I don't know. I'd be surprised if they didn't have at least a formula or some, you know, guidelines, you know. But this would...
They're going to. There is going to be a point when you go in to get your health insurance where there's going to be an AI that's going to ask a bunch of questions and they're going to be like, yeah, this person's too high risk to be insured.
Mm.
Hey, Shanna. I enjoyed that dark history today with EZ, but y'all didn't mention the one I was worried about. Where did Spank the Monkey come from?
So I did a quick look at that. And it looks like it was a crude English term for male genitalia was monkey, with the fact that it hangs like a monkey hanging from a tree. So it would be, if you're to masturbate, you are spanking the monkey.
Oh, that makes sense.
I wish that was a penalty for all these child molesting assholes that
you know, yeah, the sentencing guidelines call for 5 years, but we are going to cut your testicles off. You know, I mean, that would solve so many problems, all these repeat offenders.
Yeah. I guess you still have a scrotum. Just look like you're like your dog after you fix your dog. Slowly, it just kind of shrivels up.
Or they can fill it with jelly beans.
Yes, I would say the child rapist deserves a good castration, and the best way to do it is get some of them heavy-duty rubber bands wrapped around there real tight, and it'll just fall off. Beat it, beat it.
And the Civil War, I feel like the better movie would be the prequel. I want to see all the other stuff. Like, I don't know, it was kind of a cool movie, but I don't know. You want to see how it got there, not just the after effects.
Maybe there'll be a prequel. It's pretty dark. But like, did Mike say it was more about war journalism than anything else?
Yeah, it's about journalists traveling through different war scenarios. Well, not scenarios, but in different areas.
Maybe Jokey Jay needs to step up his game. Yeah. Where'd that one come from, huh? Hey, Jokey, when the rubber hits the road, your jokes suck. Sorry. Be-doo-be-doo.
What's the first colloquialism he used? Step up your game?
Yeah.
I don't know where that comes from.
The man, the breadwinner, he would be the guy who gets the bath first. The hot water, you know? Then all the kids and the wife and then the baby. Don't forget the baby, though.
Gross, that poor kid probably catches deadly infection after everybody else is taking a bath in there.
Yeah, but that's what you want for the baby.
Oh, to build its immunity?
Immune system, yeah.
Mm.
Dip that baby in the gross bath water.
The idea of taking a bath in the same bathwater any other human took a bath in is revolting to me.
Well, just to think, though, during that time period, the father was the one that was actually going to the fields to work all day long.
The dirtiest guy.
Yeah.
Smelliest.
Oh, by far.
Tundra, Tuna. Yo, Tate's masturbating guy, I will nod to you. You have absolutely taken that thing to an art form. And don't deviate. Don't falter. But I acknowledge you, man. You're doing a great job. Carry on. Be-do-be-do.
Oh, they for sure have formulas for that. I mean, that's how they set the rates, right? Like the actuaries and stuff. And isn't that one of the things they're talking about? That's how we're knowing that there's something going on with excess deaths, because insurance companies don't fudge with the numbers about likelihood of death and how, you know, they're having to adjust it because of the vaccines, I think, anyway.
I wonder if they have, like, risky behavior. Like, wouldn't they ask you, do you ride a motorcycle?
I'm sure that would be added in there at some point.
I mean, you know, they can't cover every bad habit you may have, right?
They'll try.
Now, when you can put your finger on a screen and then it gives you a date, then I'll be impressed.
Boop. You may want to have that drink later. Damn.
May want to call your family when you get home.
Yeah, guy.
Uh-oh.
Wait.
I think I missed this one.
Yeah, guys, we're screwed on the insurance deal. They already have that AI stuff for insurance companies. For years, there have been guys that were paid a bunch of money to, like, go through all the stats and all your information on your medical records. And the insurance companies share this information with each other to make decisions on people. So it already exists, guys, unfortunately. You're screwed. They're just making it better and better.
I mean, you got to be able to get insurance. I mean, well, they could predict the day.
Yeah, they know when to cancel your insurance. They start predicting
the
day.
Wait. There we go.
They should castrate those child molesters with a baseball bat.
Ouch.
I read on the internet, so it must be true, but the whole nine yards refers to the length of 50 caliber bullets, strings, or belts, whatever they call them. Beedoo, beedoo.
Whole nine yards?
Whole nine yards.
Oh, is that what that means?
Really good segment, EZ, with the sayings and where they came from. We need to do this on a regular basis.
I mean, that's something I can. There's so many of them.
Just idioms.
There's just so many of them.
The 200-year administration shot him. Your motorcycle has a part built by Boeing. Believe me.
Wow. Those are the remarks. Kind of let us down the second half there. There is a report out that shows that in the 50s, working age men in their prime, 96% of them had jobs.
Yeah, that sounds right. That was the American dream then.
Today, that number is 86%. So many men in the United States have stopped working. 86.
So, yeah, where is that 10% of working age men? What are they doing?
Apparently, they've dropped out of the workforce altogether. The economy was in a recession in 1953. When they were in a recession, prime age men with jobs went from 96 to 92.8 and never really recovered to the pre-recession level. It repeated itself during the Great Recession. The prime age male employment fell from 88 to 80. The pandemic recession may prove to be an exception. After falling as low as 78%, it has recovered, but it's still lower than it was in the 50s. They said there are many reasons about participation, labor force participation. They said it dips, and when it does, it doesn't ever fully recover. Why have recessions appear to be such a lasting impact on working men? They don't know. Even when the economy recovers, some occupations don't reach prior employment levels or pay as well as they used to. Hey, they probably realize, hey, why do we have all those people there? We didn't need half of them. And so, you know, men that historically dominate the workforce, they have the brunt of the impact. A strong recovery of men working after the pandemic recession could be due to unique nature of the downturn, which tanked an otherwise healthy economy. Some experts argue that the strong level of federal government spending relative to past recessions is what enabled the economy to bounce back this go around. I don't know about that.
It's been something that is completely, we've never had what this was. We've never had a forced government economic shutdown. We've had parts where the economy has imploded on itself. We've had problems and things like that, war, sickness, but we've never had a point where the government forced a healthy economy to shut itself down. So right. The numbers that we're seeing are unprecedented because we've never had that happen before. And when you kind of muck around with it and say, oh, well, this is look at all the jobs that we've added. Well, that's jobs that were there already that you got rid of. They weren't jobs that lost because of an economic downturn. They were jobs that you literally just removed them from the economy. But it still doesn't account for that 10% wherever they've gone off to. Are they
gig economy?
Are they gig economy? Are they social services? Are they
just figuring out a way that they don't have to work?
Yeah. I mean, where
on the books anyway, I guess.
Yeah. When you lose 10% of the workforce of healthy adult males that can work and they're just gone and nobody can figure out what they're doing, that they're continuing to survive.
They say, some of it can be attributed to the growing aging population, the expansion of benefits over time. But some Americans have become more reliant on disability income, in part due to the economic challenges. In 1960, 455,000 workers collected Social Security disability benefits. In 2022, 7.6 million.
There you go.
1.3 of those, 1.3 million of those are men between the ages of 25 and 54.
Just right there. I mean, there's the fact that our disabilities are so easy to get on to as an income.
Some suggest maybe they're being stay-at-home dads. Not 10% of the workforce.
That's a massive part of the workforce.
Men now account for less than half the enrollees on college campuses. That could affect employment outcomes. Among Americans 25 and older, the unemployment rate of people with only a high school diploma is 3.9 compared to 2.2 for those that have a bachelor's degree. I mean, especially in recent years, many companies just they don't have a problem hiring somebody that doesn't have a college degree. Manufacturing, food services, there's a lot of jobs out there you don't need one that pay pretty well. But in 2016, a Harvard economist, chair of the Barack Obama Council of Economic Affairs, attributed the decline of prime-age working men largely to the reduction in the demand of for unskilled labor. Like, that's all men were doing.
So you're just...
dumb, unskilled labor.
Tell me there's a bunch of hammer bangers that are just wandering the streets, unsure what to do anymore because there's no job for them?
Look, there always will be need for trades.
Yeah.
AI is not going to replace trades. Incarceration rates might also make it difficult for men to find work once they return to society. Well, I just think, a lot of people did better. You know, there were reports of people making more money during the pandemic than they made with their regular jobs with all the different benefits that were available. I mean, it was ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, how many people were out of the workforce because of the fact that they were given so many bonuses to basically stay out of the workforce?
Yeah, that was on purpose, I believe. Hold on, we got it.
Oh no, I missed a segment on sayings. I love that. Like hold 9 yards and hell's half acre. Like, what is that one? Oh, I'm going to have to be yesterday's showgirl. Because at the hospital, mom's doing good. She's having back surgery for broken vertebras.
Ugh.
Keep her in your thoughts. You guys are amazing.
Tell her Monday. Say hello to Matt from Laguna for us.
I tell you what them boys are doing, it ain't working. They panhandling and smoking dope. Be-do-be-do.
those are the remarks. Wow. In Italy, it's the right-wing government that's hot on censorship.
Really?
Yeah. Apparently... and maybe there'll be some subtle differences there, but they have a public broadcast, you know, NPR-like outfit there, and a bunch of journalists are getting ready to leave because of the right-wing government's censorship of the media. Suffocating control of their work. That's weird. I mean, I don't know. Is the right wing there same as the right wing here?
I don't know if it's quite the same.
Political influence is a big deal for their has been. You know, they always preach about it there. But there's government interference. They've expressed alarm over the legislation proposed to increase punishment for defamation. Maloney, what's that her name? I forget her first name. The PM there traced their roots back to Benito Mussolini. They say they're anti-fascist, but I don't know. We don't use our public media like they do. They would give friends of the party a cake job over there. I don't know that we do that. We might. That new CEO has never been involved in radio advertising or anything.
Yeah, but we still kind of do that.
Yeah. All right, we'll take our last break here to come back and wrap it up for you. It's the Shannon Burr Show. Talked about, what is it, sexsomnia? There's a a piece out about omnisexual. They wanted to dispel some myths. That just means that it's romantic, emotional, sexual attraction to people of all genders, regardless of gender identity or biological sex. You just don't care.
You're just going to bang.
You're just going to lay it on them, male or female. You don't care what they think they are. You don't. Here's some myths. Omnisexual people are promiscuous. This is a harmful stereotype without any supportive evidence. They're just diverse. Omnisexual people are confused. Omnisexual people know who they are and who they're attracted to. They're not confused about their sexuality at all.